yes, it's all up to you. But no. There's a world deep inside you. Trust if you can. There's a friend there to guide you. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, March 9th, 2020. Let me get a mic check before we continue, because I've been having problems with my mic. Am I coming through okay at the moment?
Sounds good to me.
Good. Yep.
Thank you. Okay, we broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you're listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can email your questions and send them to questions, that's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save America. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, we're going to pick up on our scripture reading where we left off. Goodness, it's been 2 weeks. I haven't been on for 2 weeks. So 2 weeks ago, it was the last time we had a reading. It was in the Gospel of Mark, chapter 11, so we'll pick up there. All right, this is the Gospel of Mark. We're reading in chapter 11 from verses 12 through 33. And last week we read that Jesus had entered into Jerusalem, and then he went out onto Bethany. And we start off in verse 12, and on the morrow, the following day, when they were come from Bethany back to Jerusalem, he was hungry. And seeing a fig tree afar off, having leaves, he came, if happily he might find anything thereon. And when he came to it, he found nothing but leaves, for the time of figs was not yet. And Jesus answered and said unto it, No man eat fruit of thee hereafter forever. And his disciples heard it. And they came to Jerusalem, and Jesus went into the temple, and began to cast out them that sold and bought in the temple, and overthrew the tables of the money changers, and the seats of them that sold doves, and would not suffer that any man should carry any vessel through the temple. And he taught, saying unto them, Is it not written, My house shall be called, of all nations, the house of prayer? But ye have made it a den of thieves. And the scribes and the chief priests heard it, and sought how they might destroy him. For they feared him, because all the people were astonished at his doctrine. And when even was come, he went out of the city. And in the morning, as they passed by, they saw the fig tree dried up from the roots. And Peter, calling to remembrance, saith unto him, Master, behold, the fig tree, which thou cursest, is withered away. And Jesus answered, saying unto him, Have faith in God. For truly I say unto you, that whosoever shall say unto this mountain, Be thou removed, and be thou cast into the sea, and shall not doubt in his heart, but shall believe that those things which he saith shall come to pass, he shall have whatsoever he saith. Therefore I say unto you, What things soever ye desire, when ye pray, believe that ye receive them, and ye shall have them. And when ye stand praying, forgive, if ye have aught against any, that your Father also, which is in heaven, may forgive you your trespasses. But if you do not forgive, neither will your Father, which is in heaven, forgive your trespasses. And they came together to Jerusalem. And as he was walking in the temple, there come to him the chief priests and the scribes and the elders, and say unto him, By what authority doest thou these things? And who gave thee this authority to do these things? And Jesus answered and said unto them, I will ask you of one question, and answer me, and I will tell you by what authority I do these things. The baptism of John, was it from heaven or of men? Answer me. And they reasoned with themselves, saying, If we shall say from heaven, he will say, Then why did you not believe him? But if we shall say of men, they feared the people, for all men counted John, that he was a prophet indeed. And they answered and said unto Jesus, We cannot tell. And Jesus answered, saith unto them, Neither do I tell you by what authority I do these things. That was the Gospel of Mark, chapter 11. We're reading from verses 12 through 33. Okay, I don't have too much to share tonight. I'm just going to talk a little bit about a few things, where we're going, what we're doing. You know, we're preparing for an indictment concerning the pharmaceuticals, but you know, I got sick, and we never finished off all of the paperwork necessary to put up there for people to look at concerning the charges of each and what individuals we're going to be charging. And you know, we've got some videos and things up there, but we also want to put up an affidavit. And again, a list of charges, a list of individuals that will be the targets and the charges against those people. In any event, it's not going to happen this week. I wish it could, but you know, we got so many things going on, and I'm kind of behind myself because I've been ill for about a week, picked up the flu again, but it was very mild for me this year, thankfully, and not as bad as last year. I was down for a month. But in any event, hopefully things should go well now, and we should be able to catch up shortly. I'm kind of hoping maybe the Thursday after next. I know I have a few other videos I need to put up concerning potential indictments that Rudy Giuliani was setting forth. And if you go to our grand jury tab, highlight grand jury, you'll see not only indictment consideration for Big Pharma, anybody that's going to be part of that decision-making, they should go out and read that page now, watch the videos, and just be prepared, because as soon as the paperwork's up, then you can go read the affidavit and the charges and the individuals, and then be prepared to come together and make a decision on whether we should indict or not. The other indictment consideration is Ukraine scandal indictment consideration. I'm kind of upset a little bit with Rudy Giuliani, the way he's doing this, because he's breaking away doing this and doing that. And so, you know, we're trying to pull it all together. And I don't know how long it's going to take for him to lay this all this information out for us, but we'll continue to pursue it. And we'll continue to post them. I know there's got to be at least one or maybe two other videos that need to get up there now. And I'll try to get that done tomorrow. And if, you know, depending on the point in time when he finishes, we'll see where we're at and then maybe come together for considering indictments on certain individuals concerning the Ukraine scandal. We do know that that there are others working on that anyway. It's kind of advantageous for us to be able to put that forward and send it in, but, you know, again, it is being done by others, so, but we'll see how it works, and we'll look at the timing and see what's going on at the time that we really complete all of our work and, again, lay out the names of all the targets and put together the necessary information as far as what charges we'll be charging them with, for people to come together and cast their vote for an indictment or not. Now, things seem to be moving fast, and it really is time. People need to get educated. You know, we need 30,000 people. We're still waiting for that, tipping point. We have a lot of members, but not everybody is necessarily out there getting themselves educated, and some people have stalled out on it. But some people have pursued all the way through. Some people have completed all the courses. We have one person that I'm aware of, and there may be more, that has completed all of our courses, the constitutional course, I believe they did the constitutional course too, which means they got in early enough to do that one. But we had the civics course, the government by consent course, and the militia course. People need to be educated. If we are not prepared and able to take control and fill that power void that's going to be coming up soon as the swamp is drained, someone else is going to do it. And then we got to try to take it away from them. And it'll be people who are elected or appointed in government, or it'll be the parties themselves, these private party associations that have destroyed, just totally destroyed our nation. And they will seize these positions, and they already have the positions on the political side of things. As far as the judicial side of things, it'll just continue to go forward back into bar attorneys and to bar judges. And we cannot have that. People need to understand that we are under civil law when we should be under common law. And of course, we've discussed this in the past and talked about the Rules Enabling Act of 1934, which empowered the United States Supreme Court and the federal judiciary to write the rules, and under Rule 2, they combined equity and law, and they called it civil law. They don't even call it equity and law. They call it civil law. And now we're living under statutes. We're living under the thumb of men and not under the rule of God. And if we lose there, we lose everywhere. If we cannot take back our courts and make our courts just again, then we lose it all. Everything is lost, and it'll only be a matter of time before we're back to where we started from. Because the whole process, the big thing that they worked on for 100 years and more, but particularly the past 100 years since the 20s, the 1920s at least, and even before that, going to 1913, and even before that, 1871, the Organic Act, and they've been working on this to abrogate the common law, to destroy our courts, to take the courts away from the people. And during that process of time, we went to the World War I, and then the Great Depression, and then World War II. And next thing you know, we have all this entertainment coming out, TV, radio, everybody's watching, doing, paying attention to everything but what they should be paying attention to. And they've lost their way. We, the people, have lost our way. And the only way we're going to find it is if we become educated. And we need to take control. But right now, again, the judges and the bar attorneys, the bar judges and the bar attorneys, they control the courts. And they only know what they know. They know civil law. They do not understand common law. They have no knowledge of common law. They have no knowledge of our founding fathers. They generally speaking, don't even know the Constitution. If they did, I mean, how could they abrogate common law if they understood our Constitution? And so only the people can save this. Only the people can bring it back. This nation will be only as just as its courts are. Trump is cleaning house. He's bringing things into order. But we, the people, need to bring the law back into the land. And if we cannot accomplish that, then, we're going to lose it. And they'll continue to control it. They'll continue down that road of civil law. Liberty, your liberty is civil liberties. That's what people call it all the time. They don't even understand how serious to say that civil liberties or that word democracy. Those two things particularly, people believe. They think that that's what we are and that's what we're under. And that brings us under the law of the city. That brings us under Babylon. That brings us under Roman law, and that is nothing but destructive. It puts us under the thumb of men, and we cannot have liberty. Unless we're under the law of God, the law of the creator of this universe, then we will not be under the blessings of liberty. We will not be under liberty. You will have civil liberty. Men will give you your rights, and men will take away your rights at will, and will be no different than any other nation. So this is how important it is for us to take this back, and also to take back the political process. So again, on our website, if you go up to our website and you highlight people's duty, and you should look on every page underneath people's duty. It teaches and it talks about the committeeman, the process of becoming a committeeman. People need to run for that office. If you have any questions concerning the process or the paperwork, you can bring those questions here to us on our Monday night meetings. And we'll respond to those questions. And if we have to, we'll go and update the page to make things a little more clearer. We need to take back our political process. Everybody needs to register for the militia. Under common law, you're in the militia already, but you need to register. The purpose of registering with us is in order to get people together on the counties, in your counties, collect together so that you can work together on the grassroots level, working on the committeemen, working on the militia, both the regular militia and the reserved militia, working with the administrators of the courts, and getting the word out into our election districts concerning an education, taking back our schools, getting a proper education into our schools. I mean, we have a lot of work to do and few people that are doing it. We need everybody to participate, even if it's only an hour a week. Get a hold of Jan and find yourself. He'll help connect you with some group of people that you might be interested in. If you want to start a committee that's focusing in on something different than what we've got going, we'll bring it up to the national leadership and see if it works with what we're doing. And if that does, then you can form another committee to do other things. We need people to do research. We'd love to get some people who are able to write, we need people to make phone calls. We need to, move the people that have fallen asleep. You know, again, we have a pretty large membership, and we're out on the Patriot soapbox now, playing the drum out there of our message, trying to get the people to come and get active, to become to be the patriots that they claim to be. You know, the meaning of a word patriot is a person who vigorously supports their country and is prepared to defend it against the enemies or distractors. So anybody that wants to claim to be a patriot, if you want to use that word and you call yourself a patriot, what are you doing to fix the problem? Have you joined the militia? Have you connected with the grassroots in your county? At some point, you'll be working with the sheriff, and we're going to teach people and train people how to approach the sheriff and how we can bring that sheriff in pretty easily, through a plan, laying out the law of the land and laying out common law, laying out history and what that sheriff's job is. But in any event, we need to rebuild these things from the bottom up, and we need to do it uniformly. You know, every county is unique onto its own. Every state, every county, even towns, everybody's kind of unique onto their own. They got their own little thing and their own problems and their own focuses. But there is a uniformity that we can maintain. We can maintain that uniformity with the committeemen. We can maintain that uniformity across this nation with the militia. And, of course, with the administrations that will be, controlling the juries, the grand juries and the trial juries. So please, if you have not started to get involved at least an hour a week. Many people can give more than that, but an hour a week, maybe making phone calls. And I'd like, we got, Jen, do we have 10 people now on the districts, the 10 districts? And if not, what districts are still open? You're muted, unless I'm not here anymore.
I'm sorry?
Yeah, what do we have 10 district leaders at minimum? All the districts covered, minimum? Or we still have some open?
I'm sorry, John, I didn't get that. Can you repeat it? You're kind of...
Yeah, the district leaders.
Yes, okay. Yeah, we have for the committee men of the 10 districts, we have filled 8 of them. We have 2 districts left. They're in the Midwest, District 5 and District 6. District 5 is North Dakota, South Dakota, Nebraska, Iowa, Wisconsin, and Minnesota. And District 6 is Kansas, Missouri, Illinois, Arkansas, and Oklahoma. And as you've said, and I've said before, you don't have to live in these states to assume leadership of either District 5 or District 6. You can be anywhere in the country, and we would be happy to have you take over either of those positions.
And we'd like to get 2 or more district leaders in each district, and it'll be for organizing a lot more than just the committeemen. They'll be working down into the counties, working with county organizers. Ultimately, what they want to do is they want to work with the state leadership. We want to, rekindle all of our state leadership, get them back active again, or get people to fill the positions that are inactive. And then the state coordinators, they are to be working with the county organizers within their state. You know, New York, for instance, has 62 counties, so it'd be nice to have a couple of state coordinators. And generally, we have quite a few coordinators in every state, but we have to rekindle them. We got to spark them back up again and get them active and moving and realize the importance of this thing. We need to make phone calls and to reactivate people that have kind of fallen away and fallen asleep, especially the people that have returned to complacency, thinking, Trump's got it all fixed. Hey. We're good. I don't have to worry no more. Let me go back and play. Well, no, you cannot have liberty. You may not have liberty unless you are educated and understand common law and the process and the heritage that we live under, that our founding fathers created for us, how the structure of government works. Unless we take control of that government and we make consent of our government, and we have to take these positions. You cannot rely on one man. One man cannot do it. And a group of individuals who maybe saves the day, so to speak, but if they haven't picked up these positions and become educated in these areas to take back our courts, to bring us back under law, and it's not just in the federal courts. You know, once the battle is in the federal courts. Once we win the battle in the federal courts, everything else is just a slam dunk after that, because we can force the states to be obedient to the common law. We can force the states to recognize the liberties of our unalienable rights, and the county courts and any other courts underneath that. But if you want to continue to live under this tyranny, and you want to continue to live under these statutes, which is a statutory prison, if you're enjoying that life, then just continue doing nothing. That's all it takes to continue under that tyranny, to continue under that way of life, and pass that on to your children. As for me, I'm going to do the best I can, and the leadership here at National Liberty Alliance and those who are joining forces to do what we have to do to take back this process, you know, we're taking a different direction. We need to train our children in schools to understand as they grow up, they have a duty. They have a duty to connect with the militia. They have a duty to become a committeeman at least once in their life. They have a duty to respond to the jury call. And if the opportunity is there and they're looking for a good full-time job that is rewarding and a professional position, they could become an administrator within their counties to orientate the juries and deal with it, bring the people, make a connection with the people, with the juries within their own neighborhoods. Because the grand jury should be open to anyone who wants to see them. Right now, it's as bad as we've seen one person who was arrested for stalking because trying to get to talk to the grand jury. And they don't want to give that up because their RICO, their crime, their whole crime syndicate is destroyed once we, the people, get in there. And a lot of people will be going to jail, and they know it. They are going to fight tooth and nail. But again, it should be a slam dunk for us. once the you know, the swamp is finally drained, and the big cheeses, so to speak, are really starting to be, you know, the indictments are going to be opened and people are going to be tried, and especially the big names and judges. We've indicted quite a few federal judges already. We've indicted quite a few judges already, period. We expect those indictments to be honored. After all, what is more organic as a grand jury than we the people, to how we have put it together through National Liberty Alliance across this entire nation in every single state of this union? We have organized the people, and we have declared organized unified state common law grand juries in every state, and came together as a unified United States common law grand jury for the sole purpose to deal with this tyranny, to deal with enemies both foreign and domestic that is in our government. And it's up to you, it's up to me, it's up to every single one of us, and it's up to our children and their children's children to be trained to take back and truly have government by consent, where we can remove anyone from office within 90 days through recall through the committee man process, where we can remove anyone almost immediately from office through indictments if we find them breaking the law and defrauding the people and using their positions either to destroy our unalienable rights, to destroy our Constitution, or to eat out our substance of America. So, but only the people can perform that job. Because right now it's being performed by party bosses and bar attorneys, and they're everywhere. There's over 80,000 bar attorneys in Washington, D.C. alone. Just think about that. 80,000 bar attorneys working day and night to subvert and destroy our Constitution, to destroy America, to destroy our way of life, to take away your unalienable rights and give you civil rights. And he who giveth can take us. So anyway, I'm going to pass things over to Gerard, and we're going to open up in a little while. Well, I see Brent is here, but I'll pass things over to Gerard, and we'll get Brent going, and then we'll go into some an open forum. People have questions or comments. But please, now is the time to rise up. Now is the time to take arms. And when I say take arms, I mean to become educated, to take control of our government, to take control of our political process, of our judicial process, and it is now the time to do it and to be prepared for it. It's coming, and we need to be prepared, and we need to get the word out and wake everyone else up that has started in this process with us and bring in a lot of new people and to make sure we get the numbers that we need. Again, I think we can do it with a bare minimum of 15,000, but that'll be tough. 30,000 is better, and anything more than that would be really icing on the cake. But we need to do it. And do not think that the other guy's doing it. I'm here to tell you he's not. You need to do it. Okay, with that, we're going to move over to Brent. I saw him.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute.
Here?
Give it to me. Wait a minute. Before
I'm
going to
pass things over to you.
Okay.
I just want to introduce him now. So as soon as I introduce him, you can take control of the board.
Okay. Go ahead. You can introduce him.
Okay. Where is Brent? I don't see him anymore. Did he fall out?
I think we got a couple more pages of people. He's probably back further than he was.
Well, he came in as a host, so I'm pretty sure he did.
Yeah, he was. He was in as a host.
If you click on roll, all the hosts should pop up top.
Oh, okay.
Brent, if you're here somewhere, I don't see him in the queue, and I don't see him on the top of the board here. So he may have fallen out, and maybe he'll come back in. So anyway, when Brent comes back in, you can introduce him and pass it over to him for a while. But until then, I don't know if you have anything to share. Oh, is there any questions or any announcements that need to be made, Jan or Terry?
We have a bunch of questions. The main announcement was just that we're still looking for the committee man district leaders. If you want to start with questions.
Again, the job of the district leaders will be to work with the state coordinators within their district and to work with them to assist them to get the county organizers moving, to get the county organizers in every county, and then get those county organizers starting to connect with the people who join up with the militia, who become committeemen, and get involved into the administration for the juries. And that's all grassroots. We need to empower the people on the grassroots level, but we need to educate them also. You empower without education is only destruction. But that's where we're at with that. All right, anything else other than that? Any other announcements?
No other announcements, just questions.
We'll take a few of them. I'm going to try to move through them.
I just want to say before you move on, what you were talking about with the grand jury, what you were describing, that grand jury that could remove somebody from office, you know, by indictment. What you were describing is what they worked so hard to get rid of, which was the runaway grand jury. That's what they're afraid of. That was grand juries doing their jobs and investigating and indicting besides what the prosecutor brought them. When they assemble a grand jury, anybody should be able to come to that grand jury, and they should be able to investigate anything they want. They're not supposed to be tied by the judge or the prosecutor or just the charges that they bring. It's we the people looking at stuff and making sure that things are okay. And you know, if you read U.S. versus Williams, it tells you what the job of the grand jury is. Well, they fear a runaway grand jury. And if you everything John described tonight with that grand jury, they would call that a runaway grand jury. That's the thing that strikes fear in their hearts. They do not want the people running the government, and that's exactly the tool that our forefathers gave us to keep control of the government. So I just wanted to say that, you know, if you don't know what a runaway grand jury is, look it up. It's in a lot of our books and stuff, and I'm sure Brent also in the Excellence of the Common Law has probably commented on that too. But anyway, go ahead, John.
All right, and jurists must come up from the land. It must be organic, okay? And so therefore we must come up from the land. And as I mentioned before, what is more organic, what is more rightfully a jury, a grand jury, than we the people who have come up from the land and educating ourselves to try to save this nation? So, again, everybody needs to get into the game here. It's time to step up, and it's time to get educated. It's time to get prepared. Now is the time. The call for patriots is now. Okay, Jen, what questions do you have?
Okay, what's your next step when you file a judicial notice in the court to recuse a judge, and 2 days later he shows up in court and gives a continuation on your case?
Move it to federal court for cause, violating your right of due process.
Okay.
Next.
If one has substantial evidence to prove CPS and deputy a perjury, illegal emergency removal, and therefore unnecessary out-of-home placement of children, and vaccinations against our exemptions, including a religious convictions, where can we find the steps we need to take to hold them accountable for their crimes? There was no warrant and no emergency.
They will never be held, you know, liable for their crimes unless we, the people, take back the courts. And it starts with taking back the federal courts and bringing law back into the federal courts and thereby requiring it right down into the states. Any kind of a court that operates under civil law is no court at all. And people can challenge jurisdiction and be removed from that court. They have no power, no authority. They can charge them with nothing. But, of course, they'll do what they please until we, the people, take power and control. We have to take back control of the federal courts, federal district courts. We need to remember that these judges in these federal district courts, they're there to rule on equity and not law. They're not there to rule at law at all, with the exception of a challenge of jurisdiction because you're not getting due process. They have a duty to protect the people. They have a duty. We should go into courts and expect them to rule the right way. And when they don't rule the right way, they need to recuse themselves. And if necessary, we need to consider those judges for indictment because they're denying the essence of our law, which is the right of due process, the right to be judged by our peers in a court of law, not in a court of equity, not in a civil court, not by the rules and the laws of men, but by the rules and the laws of God. And people need to get that message and understand that clearly, and that's what we need to do, and we need to do it now. We're not gonna solve any of the other problems. All these problems with family courts, they will not be solved until we solve the problem in the federal courts. All the problems with all of these courts, the denying due process, they're not going to be solved. All of these people that are being go to jail for driving without a license and various other things without even being brought before a grand jury or anything, and they're tried by, a stacked jury. If they're lucky, usually they get some judge up there that makes all the necessary judgments. And that will continue, and it will never stop until we, the people, get educated, step up, and take control. NLA has a plan. And the plan is to bring back our militia, to bring it back to the people, to build up that militia from the grassroots level up. Our plan is to take back our courts through the administrations of the juries. Our plan is to take back the political process by getting rid of these party bosses, these private associations that have destroyed our nation, and these bar judges that have destroyed our courts. So until that happens, none of those things will ever be fixed. And they will continue, no matter who's in power, and no matter what Trump does, they will continue to do and continue to operate under civil law, because people are that ignorant, they don't know. Next question.
Okay, this is a continuation. If CPS knows the prosecutor has wanted to close my case even prior to the next hearing, why would CPS ask me again to hold a review meeting at the CPS office? I feel this is an attempt to pull us back into the system. I'm currently working on sending an affidavit of truth with evidence of fraud upon the court. Therefore, the judge has allowed me a continuance for this purpose. However, the judge set a new hearing date 6 months from now, and I can't get a copy of the court transcript.
Yeah, well, the whole court system is corrupt. You know, again, if you understand somewhat how the system works, the best you can do is to move it into federal court for cause. You demand, you challenge the jurisdiction. You tell them they don't have jurisdiction. You let them know when they try to make a decision to say that they have jurisdiction, you tell them they have to recuse themselves. You already believe you have jurisdiction. I'm challenging that. Once jurisdiction is challenged, it must be decided, which means it's got to be heard, and it can't be heard by you. It's got to be heard by another individual, and the decision, you know, the case has to be made from both sides, and the decision has to be rendered. And the bottom line, it must be rendered, you know, to the fact that you don't have jurisdiction, because they're operating under statutes, and they're operating under the whim of men. They make it up as they go, especially the family courts. They just totally make everything up. I don't know if they follow anything. They do have some basic rules, but they don't even follow them. They just do what they please, and they just destroy, destroy, destroy. And they will continue to destroy our families. They will continue to destroy our children until we, the people, step up, take back control of our nation so that we can have government by consent again. And until that happens, we will continue to be beaten down. We will continue to live under tyranny. We will continue to lose our liberty. And it'll only get worse. It'll never get better unless we step up right now. Next.
Okay, this is a continuation. I went to court today and couldn't believe the disrespect I was shown. People laughing in my face once I spoke about constitutional rights that I have. The magistrate proved jurisdiction for the petitioner after asking her what was her response to my challenge to jurisdiction. She said it was a joke, and I can't believe it. I'm looking for help now on how to move forward, if you can help me out.
Well, again, you know, we can tell you things, but if you don't understand how things work, and you don't know the next step, and you don't know how to deal with the next judge that's going to try to take control over your life, you're just going to be met with the same rudeness and disgust. It's going to continue. Okay? What has to happen is the jurisdiction must be challenged. and you must move it into federal court for cause, for denial of due process. You need to be able to build your case and make it clear of denial of due process and demand and expect that that federal judge is there for the sole purpose to protect your unalienable rights. That's his duty, and if he fails to do it, then he needs to recuse himself, and you can challenge that jurisdiction and take it up into the appellate court and right up into the United States Supreme Court, which they won't hear, because, look it, tell me that the United States Supreme Court does not know that by rule, a court at an earlier date, back in 1938, that the judges of that back in that day, both the Supreme Court judges and the federal district judges, they decided for us, for the people, to get rid of the law of the land. The Constitution is null and void in their courts. Your unalienable rights do not exist in their courts. You have civil rights if they feel like giving it to you. Now, but they also know the truth and they know the lie. That's the one thing about the federal courts, and you can use that against them and put the pressure upon them to where they realize and understand, well, if I don't do something here in this case, I may be held liable here, especially if they see that the swamp is being drained, especially if they see, you know, well, again, that's why we're taking joiners to our case, to come in power with numbers. Anybody, we're doing an IRS thing, too. I got to check to see how things are going on that. I want to get ready to move on that one. So anybody who wants to do an affidavit, you know, send something into intake at nationallibertyalliance.org. Send, well, get a hold of Jim through intake at nationallibertyalliance.org. But there's power in numbers. There's safety in numbers. And that's why we're collecting these things. But if someone really feels savvy and they really feel they understand the system and they think they can do this on their own, well, okay, fine. But I hate to give people advice when they don't really understand what they're doing and really how to handle the forms and the information and deal with the process and be able to intimidate the judge. Because if you can't intimidate that federal judge, if you cannot control the narrative of that court, if you cannot keep the other side on the defense and you be on the offense, if that's not happening, you're losing. You break in any of those areas, you're losing, and you need to step back, regroup, and figure out what went wrong and how you need to fix it, because you're losing. And so that's where it ends up. If you think you could do it, fine. If you need our assistance, join the cases with us. Next.
Hey, John, not only all that, but people should not be going into court, any court, local court, federal court, without bringing court watchers with them and other people. Those judges misbehave. When you have a bunch of people there, a couple anyway, with notepads taking notes and giving affidavits at the end of it, you watch and see how that local judge respects you more. I mean, we've trained people all these methods. I mean, some people came in later, they don't know about that. But there's a certain way to go into court, even the local court, when you get summoned in. And like John says, you know, I got to know how to conduct yourself, because you're going to get about as much respect from them as they think that you deserve. And the only respect you deserve is the fact that you can come back and hurt them because you conduct yourself in a manner that can come back and bite them. And if you start your case out professionally and they know that you're going to go into federal court, a lot of times, sometimes, I shouldn't say a lot of times, sometimes the judge will look to get rid of you because he doesn't want that headache. But that's how, it all depends on how you approach it. And if, and they do respect numbers, because if you're not alone, they don't feel so comfortable abusing you when other people are watching. So that being said, you should never go to court alone. I don't care. It's just, you're just setting yourself up for abuse. That's one of the things you should start out doing, is making sure you bring witnesses with you, court watchers. They don't need to say anything. They just need to take notes. And at the end of the hearing, they need to make an affidavit and go get it notarized and give it to you as part of your case. Because when you go to federal court, that will prove the federal case that they violated your due process, ultimately, is what will happen. That's only one of the tools of that court watcher. So I just wanted to mention that, okay?
Right.
I yield.
99% and I venture to say probably 100% of judges on the town, village, and city levels. Okay, they are totally ignorant. They have no knowledge, and they don't even have enough sense to be frightened when you bring these things up, generally speaking, anyway. On a state level, I'll take a guess that maybe 80% of the judges are just morons in the sense that they have no idea. They've been, remember, these people all have been trained in bar schools. Okay, they've been destroyed, and they believe that the common laws have been abrogated. They see no problem with that. They don't understand that we, the people, ordained and established that Constitution, and that the federal judiciary had no power, no authority to try to take that away from the people. And they did it because the people were ignorant. Nobody said anything. Yeah, there were people fighting close by, but they didn't get a voice. They couldn't get it amplified, but the general public had no clue. And they have no idea how unjust our courts are until they get trapped in it themselves and destroyed. So on the state level, I'd say probably a good 80% of the judges are ignorant to this, and maybe 20% of them you might be able to put the fear of the people into them. On the federal level, I doubt there's very few federal judges that don't understand the complete picture. They don't realize that they are guilty of treason. And you see, if you start to pipe that information into the courtroom without doing very subtly, okay, a little thing here, a little thing there, and the judge starts to realize what you're doing and that you're building a case against that individual, against that judge for subversion unless he does or she does the right thing, okay? And only until you can do that will you be able to win in that federal court. But you will get some of these judges, they don't care anyway. They're even willing, because they're paid, you got the fixers out there, they'll be paid even extra money and be willing to even go to jail if that's, or face the possibility of jail, if that's okay, because they're getting enough payment. I mean, that's the way I see it, because some of these judges, they just don't care about nothing, evil to the core. But most of the federal judges, you can put the fear of the people, the fear of God into them, but you have to do it subtly. A little here, a little there. They got to be scratching their head and wondering about you. Who is this person? What do they really know? Where are they going with this thing? But I'm finding myself trapped here. I'm stuck now between the rock and the hard place. I have no place to hang my hat. See, only then might you be able to get something going there in the federal courts. But again, you go in weak, you go in and don't have the plan ready to rock and roll with, you're going to get beat up there too, and it's just the way it is. Look, it's unjust. It's going to continue to be unjust until we, the people, decide we're going to become educated and take this nation back and give it back to the people, to our posterity, and be blessed again with liberty. Gerard, did you want to say something?
I don't think there's a prosecutor out there that wants to end up in federal court. If that's what jurisdictionary says. He says you prepare your course as if you're going to appeal it to the federal courts. And that's, if he's got any education at all and he sees you're preparing your case in order to appeal it to the higher court, that alone can make them watch themselves. Because These lawyers get chewed up in federal court. They don't want to go to federal. Unless there's somebody that's operating in federal court in a normal, regularly, they're afraid of the federal court. They're afraid of the judges. They don't want to go there. I'll tell you that as a fact. So if you set your case up properly, and like you said, and you're subtly hinting that that's where they're going to end up, I think more of them will take notice. They just think that we're stupid. We're ignorant, and we're not going to appeal it. Everybody thinks that you need you go hire an attorney to take you federal court. There are attorneys that operate in federal court. They have to be, I don't know, certified for that or something, that not just any attorney can operate in federal court. It costs $30,000 for a retainer. So these judges are the average person that comes into court. They don't have $30,000 for an attorney to appeal it to a federal court. But if you conduct yourself in a manner and you show that you know the court procedure and you're setting your case up for an appeal and possibly in the federal court, I think more of them will take notice because they'll understand. Now, the judge, he doesn't want to come under the scrutiny of the upper court because they're jealous of their power. Those upper courts like to slap the lower courts a little bit, you know. So there is a little nervousness there. But the prosecutor, if they're prosecuting you or they're bringing you in, they don't want to end up in federal court if they can help it. That's what I believe anyway. But, you know, it's all about how you conduct yourself. And the words that you use, and of course, that requires the education that you just said, John. So,
right. You know, look, at one of the key points is the fact that they're operating under civil law. You need to make that case and make it clear, and that is subversion against the United States of America. It's subversion against we the people. It's subversion against our Constitution. And it's also robbery of God, because they've robbed us of our common law processes, you know, our courts, and they've decided to make the law and just move God aside, so to speak. And right now, it's a time of judgment. And in my opinion, I see it happening—a worldwide judgment against these people. You know, the deep state is falling in all of the democracies that the United States have been building over the past 50 or 60 years or so, more than 60 years, quite some time, 70 years, 80 years. All the democracies we've been building. Okay, a democracy is nothing but mob rule. A democracy is preparation for an oligarchy. And that's what we, the people, that's what our nation had become, an oligarchy. We're an oligarchy under Bush. We're an oligarchy under Clinton and under Bush and under Obama. And, you know, the people behind the scenes making the decisions. And until Trump came in and spoiled their game, and upset the whole thing, okay? We have that opportunity to take it back. Are you going to get educated? Are you going to step up? Are you going to take control? Are you going to get involved on the grassroots? Are you going to be the militia? Are you going to be we the people? Are you going to be the decider and the person who consents to your government or not? Are you going to be the individual who puts the people on the ballot? So you're going to let the party bosses to continue to do that, and you're going to let the bar attorneys to continue to rob our courts and destroy our children, our posterity, our future, our life, our law, our liberty. Next question. Any more questions? Probably muted. Jan, you have to unmute yourself. Did we lose Jan?
He's probably filling his water glass up.
Maybe he walked away for a second. Jan, are you back? Okay, you know what? Maybe we'll take whatever questions are left. We'll take them next week. Because, you know, we want to open up to people anyway.
Yeah, I have a short one here.
We'll take a short one.
Can a common law trust be lawfully revoked, and if so, how?
That's a good question, and, you know, I did see that question floating around. I meant to do a little research on that because I'm not sure of the answer on that. But Brent is here, maybe when he picks up the mic, which I still know. I don't see him back yet. Brent's not here at the moment.
No,
but
I don't see
him. When Brent does get back in here and he takes the mic, bring that question to him.
Okay.
All right, I guess that'll do it. We'll pick up any other questions next week. How many questions do we have left right now that'll roll over?
Just one.
Let's take it.
Okay. Can you discuss the rights of media and journalism to report facts using various media versus a person's right to a fair trial without prejudice? Does common law protect...
I got confused. Start over. That just
Can you discuss the rights of media and journalism
to report... Okay, that's one question. Okay. But go ahead.
Okay. To report facts using various media versus a person's right to a fair trial without prejudice. Does the common law protect the ones presumed to be innocent? I experienced with the very opposite, being assumed to be guilty by the fact that I was accused in the system presently used.
Mm-hmm. Well, look, as a matter of fact, we're hearing even congressmen talking about their reputation has already been destroyed. And you know, because of what media is doing and continues to do. But their day is coming. Judgment is coming. Think not that only these crooked politicians are going to jail, because all of these political hacks that call themselves news media, okay, a lot of them are going to jail too. They are part of the conspiracy to subvert and destroy this nation. Anybody who is bringing forth fake news, okay, is doing nothing but destruction to our nation. Blocking justice. What's the word I'm looking for?
Obstruction.
Obstruction of justice. Okay, that's obstruction of justice. Any of these people that are pushing socialism, communism. Look at, there's already U.S. codes that cover all this. If you're teaching, spreading, creating a group to spread socialism in this nation, to overtake our Constitution, overtake our heritage, our way of life, that is subversion. And there are codes that lay it out. Matter of fact, we have quoted a lot of these codes in our papers. Right now, they're going to continue doing whatever they want to do, and they're going to continue to injure people, and we're going to continue to get injured, until we, the people, decide we have enough, get educated, and take this nation back. Take it in our courts, take it in a political process, get the militia together, and let's just take it back, and let's put them all in jail. That's all I have to say. Okay, is Brent back? I don't see him. Does anyone see him? I guess not.
You know.
Okay. I'm going to pass. Huh?
I think he's come back.
Okay, well, if he comes in, let Gerard know, and then we'll pipe things over to him, and then you can pass that question concerning the trust, and we'll take it from there. I'm going to grab a bite to eat, and I'll bring my dinner here in front of the computer and listen in too, but I'll be away for at least 10 minutes to get dinner together. Gerard, you got it.
Okay. I'll go down through the list, but I was going to add to what John just was talking about. I don't understand how they think that they can let any kind of a party run, like a communist party or a socialist workers' party. Because ultimately, if you look at their creed, their manifesto, it is to destroy the Constitution. It's subversion. It's treason. So you can talk about it all you want, but the minute you try to implement it, you're committing treason. There are certain things that cannot be changed in this country. I don't care how many votes you get or how much of Congress you get. You can't go against the fundamental principle that all men are created equal and that we have rights from God. The minute you do those things, you're committing subversion and treason. End of story. Years ago, they used to arrest you for being in a communist party. And people say, oh, that's ridiculous. They shouldn't be able to do that. Well, maybe you can be in a communist party and you can talk about it and you can meet. But the minute you try to implement those things, whether it be local, state or federal government, You're committing subversion and treason, because it goes against the Bill of Rights, our fundamental beliefs that this country was founded on. So we cannot legally put in a Marxist communist government in this country, because our laws are written against it. Our whole creed, the whole thing that created us, is against that general idea. So when you have certain groups, and there's more than one, who says that, we're here to change the system and to tear the system down and put our own system in, we don't have majority rules. We have a rule of law, and we have one lawgiver, and that's what we're under. So, this is a fallacy that they think that they can change America by putting people from certain religious and political persuasions that are going to change the Constitution because they're going to get enough votes. Having enough votes to change the Constitution, there's a certain number of votes in order to amend it and change it, but you can never give less power to the people. You can never take away what's there. You can never undermine the founding principle that gave us our freedom. And that's what people don't understand. They think that if enough people get together and they decide to subvert the Constitution, they could do it just based on the amount of votes that they can get. That is, there is nothing further from the truth. That's a lie from hell. So I just wanted to say that. Anyway, we got lots of people in the queue. And I'm going to start by taking...
Thank you. I love you.
Unmuting Jeff, it looks like, from Florida. Go ahead. You've been unmuted.
Good evening, all. I just want to talk to my... Well, I guess I can. Okay. I'm trying to talk to my phone rather than speaker. First thing I just want to mention very quickly is a suggestion. Hopefully I didn't miss this, but I would request, if we can, to put a link for our questions, an email link on the website, on that page, because I just got a new computer. I've lost all my data. I don't have that. I don't have an email address, and I would love to have been able to send my questions via email. I'm hopeful that we can add something here kind of to the mix relating to the committeeman process. Maybe we can have a special time and day set aside for committeeman to meet. And also, I'd love to be able to have an opportunity, some kind of opportunity to verbally address any of those folks on any of these calls. I've been trying to get that accomplished, and I haven't been successful, but I'm sure there's a magical way to get it done.
So I don't say that again. I don't understand. You want to do what now?
As far as the committeeman effort, there's two things. I would like for the committeeman. I just heard in tonight's meeting that there's going to be committeemen at various levels throughout the country. And, you know, it just seems that we all of us should be able to, well, I mean, ideally we would have some kind of a weekly or monthly meeting where we can communicate with one another.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the whole process of becoming a committeeman and the page we have, that can be expanded out so that there could be a continuing dialogue on people properly using the office and training themselves. I mean, look at one of the first things that committeemen need to do when they come in is they need to understand the Constitution. They need to take the Constitution course because that's going to help them. Most of what goes on in these committees is subversive anyway. So if you know right. The Constitution, you can stand up for it. You can't stand up for it if you don't understand what they're doing. Although,
agreed.
You know, party rules are a pain in the neck, and it would be really nice to get rid of those parties. Washington's farewell address, his whole half of it was about the party subverting the nation, which they've done, taking the reins of power away from the people and using the parties. That's what we need to do as committeemen. We need to bring it back to the people. So, yeah, can we have a page and discuss that? Absolutely. You know, and if we get committeemen going in as we should in every state, they need to be having this dialogue on a regular basis, and they need to be educating themselves. And right. You know, if you don't know something that's going on, I mean, it does some of the rules, because their party rules do vary from even county to county and certainly from state to state. You know, basically the way the parties are now, they're private associations, and so it's like the judges can't even tell them what to do or anything. And in one respect, it's good, but it's also bad because what happens is they're violating the law, and you try to take them to court. The judge, oh, I can't get involved in that. That's a private association. You know what I mean? That's a big cop out on the judge's part. So these things need to be discussed in depth, more depth than we go through them here on a Monday night call. And, you know, if you want to set up I don't know if we're going to have a, we have a committee man, how to become a committee man page. That can be expanded, and certainly you can take, you know, run the narrative or take the, you know, put a question and answer section. And if you want to head that up, that's what John was saying, you know. It's up to you. You want to be, if you want to create that group, or expand the group that we have into a dialogue between, a national dialogue with committee men, because certainly there should be a national dialogue, because the committee man is supposed to do what the committee man does, and that should not be any different from state to state. His basic job should be his basic job, because that's the grassroots, the people picking the candidates for representation. You know,
right,
we fought a war, no taxation without representation. Where does that representation come from? Well, basically, it comes out of the committees. And you've got a top-down thing, and it's not coming from the committee men per se. It's coming from the party bosses, who are all bought and paid for.
Right. It's funny.
So if you want to run that, Jeff, have at it, buddy.
Yeah. You know what? So I'm actually going to address that now. I mean, this is, you've added some really nice, you know, little tidbits that what I addressed with John mostly was, geez, John, can I shorten this? I think in addition to shortening the first, you know, introduction of it, I think I also need to add some layers at the same time. So that's what I'm gonna do that right now. Now, John said that I have to pass it, you know, through him for his approval, and that's fine. But I'm gonna work on that right now, because I really, you know, I mean, for whatever reason, I've had only two people send me emails, send me inquiries, and you know, that's just not sufficient. We need to get a lot more people involved. And I don't know what the answer is, and I'm not saying at all. I don't want to suggest that what we have on the website is the problem. I just think we have to do something more. That's all.
Well, listen, if you're heading up a group that's going to be a national advisory on committee men, where they can come in and ask questions and things like that, certainly you can bring some of that into the Monday night call, an issue that gets to everybody, because everybody should be looking at this. Everybody should become a committee man at some point. So you certainly could take, you know, like if you have an issue, instead of just posting it on the committee man page or talking on the phone to somebody over in another state or whatever you're doing, you can bring them into the Monday night call, especially if you have a certain problem that you think is going to affect everybody. Then you come in as the as the head of that particular committee, and give a report. And that way,
that is the best way to do it.
Yeah,
everyone benefits.
Nobody's going to look at you. Come in with something that you got from the committee. This is the place to do it, right here on the Monday night calls. I mean, the actual, you know, page and that committee that you're to educate the committee men and to recruit them. Well, you'll be doing a lot of whatever over there that you wouldn't want to do on a Monday night call. That's very specific to committee men. But those things that come out of here, it's up to you at that point to bring them to the general discussion on Monday night, and to announce what you discover, and maybe even put out there certain problems that you're having that need to be solved. And that's how you get the whole group involved. You know what I mean? Bring them into the problems, you know, air them on Monday night, whatever the problem might be, or whatever the discovery you had might be. You know what I mean? Yeah, no, that's not
absolutely
a bad idea.
Yeah, I like it. I like it. Hey, just one more last thing. I did sign up for the militia. I've not heard from anyone. I wonder if maybe it'd be good for me to, you know, take that bull by the horns, you know, at least for the capital region of New York. I don't know.
I don't know what to tell you about that, because I'm not in the nuts and bolts of that, but you know, I don't know what kind of organization they're doing per se. But look at the militias, you know, ultimately they got to be run locally, so everybody's going to have to step up to the plate in their area. In other words, you know, you should be educating your sheriff and getting with him. And probably if you can get a bunch of guys together that understand what the militia is, we got a lot of material. Brent has been going over it, you know, and he's got good books on it that yep. I would send people to. Once you got five or six or eight guys that you start the unorganized militia is what it is, and then you go visit the sheriff and you say, look, we're the unorganized militia, and we want to make sure you know who we are, and we want to know that you're on the people's side and that you understand the Constitution and where we stand. That's how you do it. You don't go to the sheriff by yourself. You go in with a team of people, preferably
right.
all from the same county, because the sheriff is a political animal in that respect. His constituents oh, yeah. are in his county, and so they don't like to waste a lot of time with people outside their county, because look, they are politically motivated, and so they're concerned about what people in their counties are thinking about them. So just understand yeah. that when you have dialogue with him, but. Certainly you want to go with more than one person.
You have to go in with a plan, too. We're trying to formulate that plan. And so right now is a time of education, and that plan will come out shortly, hopefully in the next couple of weeks, you know. And once that plan is laid out, you know, we're going to have to figure out, and maybe this is going to have to be a decision to people in the grassroots, you know, is six people enough, or do you feel you need 10, you know? And you have to organize correctly. You have to have rules laid out, which we've laid out all that stuff out already, resolutions and everything. And now with that connected with a plan on how to approach the sheriff and how to sell him, what he needs to be sold, because he needs to be sold the Constitution, because right now he hasn't bought it. So that's
well,
key.
And, you know, I mean, I've been, can I just jump in just very quickly, just for educational purposes for anyone listening as well, but, you know, I've been in regular contact.
Is this Jeff?
Yeah.
Yes, Jeff Gold, yeah.
Okay.
I've been in regular contact.
I got Jeff from Florida here. It should be, someone change that to New York, NY. Yeah, Jeff,
you know,
we should
get
forward.
I thought he was incognito.
Yeah, we need to get together and talk, because we got a lot of things we got to get moving on. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I have some issues that I shouldn't be, you know, mentioned here, but
no.
you know, but
let's
yeah.
try
well,
to
yeah,
connect
not,
this week. Connect with me this week, and let's
sure.
have a meeting. Okay. If you
Absolutely.
Can't find me, find Jan or Francine. They'll find me. But you got my cell number okay. and everything, right?
I do. Yes.
Yeah.
Hey. So if, you know, just to mention though, and I have, like, for example, as a local sheriff. That just recently said in the Times Union, the local paper here, that he's responsible for defending the Second Amendment, but he's just as responsible for defending those people that don't believe in it, or something to that effect. And I mean, and I've actually tried to reach out to this guy. I don't trust him. He won't talk to me over the phone. He wants to talk to me in person. I have a very, very bad feeling of what his intentions might be. You know, so. We definitely want to, you know, kind of figure these things out. In some cases, we may not want to do anything, because I don't think that me meeting with someone like that is a good idea. Certainly not alone. I mean, because why? I mean, why wouldn't you want to talk to me on the phone? I mean, there's more to the story. I mean, I don't know if you remember, John, but I have a very impressive lawsuit before the Third Department on the Second Amendment. An Article 78 proceeding, and I got, you know, people are up in arms about that. But anyway, okay, I'll call you during the week.
Okay, thank you, Jeff. I don't know where
thank
John
you.
Went, but I don't see him. But anyway,
that's okay.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. And I don't know. Hey, anybody that's been in the military, what's the smallest formation that you send out? Is it a patrol? What's a patrol? Is that two people or three people? Does anybody know?
I'm not military. I have no idea.
The Air Force is a squad, but that's the smallest.
A squad. Okay. So as far as I'm concerned, that the militia can operate at that level as a squad. If you got four people in the county that are willing to be a militiaman, look, there's a reason the military picked four people. It's tactical. I'm not sure exactly, you know, maybe the way you lay fire down, I'm not going to expand upon it.
Right.
But those things have come about for tactical reasons, and that's basically what the militia should be following. So, you know, I mean, you wouldn't want to do it with two people, probably, and I'm not saying you couldn't do it, but at some point you become ineffective. So, you know, and I mean, look, it certainly would be great to have 10 people versus 5 people, but I if you had 5 people that were in a county that were committed to being militiamen, I wouldn't tell them, no, you can't do it, you need more people, you know.
Absolutely, and, I agree, yeah.
Of course, if you got a sheriff like you got that's really wishy-washy with the Constitution, the more people you go down there with, the more his mind is going to get changed, because I don't care what you say, he's a political animal and he's looking to please his constituents. And if he thinks that he's living in a county that's becoming more constitutional, let me tell you what, he will become more constitutional if he wants to keep his job.
Well,
and that's,
you know,
exactly,
historically,
if I went in there with 5 people and he gave me trouble, I'd say, well, guess what? We're working on getting you unelected next year. Matter of fact, maybe I'm going to run for sheriff or something to that effect. You know what I mean?
As it is, that particular county is pretty Republican. That's why I jumped on that. I really thought that it would make sense, of me to spend the time to, try to, educate him a little bit. But
hey, listen, sometimes the Republican guy are the worst ones of the bunch. I hate to tell you, the rhinos, you're better off with a liberal because they get less of a turn around the corner to come back to conservative than some of the other ones, they're Republican.
There's a judge in one of the local counties who's now the sheriff of that county, and he has said in his court rulings, orders, I should say, that the Second Amendment is a privilege of New York State. So, he's a Republican. So you're right.
He's supposed to supposedly know certain things. Well, he obviously doesn't know the Constitution, does he? If he thinks the Second Amendment is a privilege.
But I got to tell you, for whatever reason, and I don't think this is just isolated cases, the sheriffs around here are not the brightest people in the world. And I believe that's by design. I think the parties are bringing people, that are not that intelligent, aren't educated, don't know the Constitution, so that they can, control them.
Yeah,
so that's,
well,
and that's a whole separate issue. But anyway, all right. Well, cool. Thanks,
okay,
Bart. I'll talk to you soon. Have a good night. Take care. Bye-bye.
Hey, I think that Brent is here. I see him logged in, and there was two things. I mean, besides the fact we wanted to talk for a little bit here, there was two questions we had for Brent, one of them being about a common law trust and can it be dissolved and how. And the other one, what was the other one, Jan? I don't remember. I am having a senior moment. I had it here on the tip of my tongue a minute ago.
Let me get back to it. I'm on the wrong person here at the moment.
It was... The common law trust
was the first one that we wanted to have.
And then there was something else that we thought that he could answer. It'll come to me. But, Brent, if you're there and you can hear us, why don't you type in?
Am I heard?
Yes.
Yes. So.
Oh, good.
We got a question that came up on the email questions that we thought that you might be able to expand upon better than any of the rest of them. Which was, what was it, Jan? Go ahead, read it.
It is, can a common law trust be lawfully revoked, and if so, how?
The answer is yes. It depends upon whether it's revocable or irrevocable. And when you draw up a trust, you put up right in the front, you ought to put, this is an irrevocable trust, or so-and-so family irrevocable trust. But if you don't want it to be irrevocable, you say it's a revocable trust. It's that simple. Of course, it's good then to put it in the first few paragraphs someplace that it's this so-and-so revocable or irrevocable trust. And then how can you revoke it? Was that the question, Jan?
Yeah, how would you do?
Well, if it's revocable, then the person that has the power of revocation, and that'll be written in the document too, can revoke it. And that's the end of that. But if it's irrevocable, then it's not revocable. Nobody has a power of revocation. So to make it simple, I shouldn't talk anymore. I think that's the simplicity of it. It depends upon...
Do you know if it could be done by the trustees, or would it be done by the settlor?
It would be done by the trustee, probably, but it could be done by the settlor. It depends upon, here's the elasticity of the trust, and the that's why it's so such a powerful thing.
So it should be really defined clearly inside.
Sure, but in most cases, it's going to be if the settlor is the trustee also. Well,
I don't think they can be the same. I think they need the two trustees and one settlor.
They can be the same. Settlor can,
right.
Yeah. But when you do that, you sacrifice protection of your assets. The further that the settlor, who is the one who establishes the trust, the further he is from the control of his former property, the more protection it will have. There's two ways to make a trust. Let's make it simple this way, and this will define that question. Trust can be settled in two ways and only two ways. Either the trust or the settlor, the one that owns the property, says, I declare myself trustee. That's called trust by declaration. I declare myself trustee to hold property for these beneficiaries. Well, he hasn't changed anything. He still owns the property because the trustee is the owner of the property, or trustees, plural. That's one way. Trust by declaration. I declare my property now held in trust. I hold it in trust now. The second way to do it is called transfer into trust. That's where the person that owns the property says, I'm transferring this property to a trustee to hold title for the benefit of the beneficiaries, and I no longer own the property. There's all sorts of combinations that can go in there, but those are the fundamental ways, only two fundamental ways, to settle a trust. Trust by declaration or trust by transfer.
Okay. There is a second question, Brent.
And before you do that, I remembered the other question I wanted Brent to answer, too. And that was on the militia. What is the smallest conceivable amount of people in an area that you should be able to start a militia with? Like in the military, the smallest unit to go out on patrol would be a squad, which I believe is four people. Do you think that four people in an area is enough to do the beginnings of a militia, or should they have more, like 8 or 10 people?
I agree with you. I would say 2 or 3, but I would say even 1, and I say that for this reason. Because the militia is, as we've said often before, you are a member of the militia if you're an able-bodied male over a certain age, and you're able to wield a military-grade weapon in battle. That's always been the definition of a militiaman from ancient days forward, from the days of the Old Testament and the 12 several tribes, militia, and then the rules that are laid down there in the books of Moses. So every person that fills those requirements of being an able-bodied male above a certain age, he is a member of the militia. He doesn't need somebody else to say, yeah, I am too. The whole world could disagree with him. And if he knows that he is, he should act like he is. And he should fulfill his duties like God wants him to. Now, that means, of course, well, to put it in these kind of terms, at common law, we're all responsible to do the right thing no matter what, individually. We don't need other people to join us to do the right thing, and that's the problem with our country. We think that there has to be some kind of a mass movement. We get together here in L.A., and that's good. We can get together, that's good. But Martin Luther put it this way. He said, I've discovered that God plus one makes a majority.
There you go.
Yeah,
I like that.
We've
That's
all
a great answer, right?
Yeah. And so every man needs to see himself that way, and if others join with him, great. If they don't, every man's going to hold his territory himself. By the way, I've discovered reading history and in my own life, and I think if those that are listening have lived very long, they'll probably have to agree with me. They'll say, yeah, I've discovered that too. If you're going to do what's right, eventually, you're going to do it alone. Eventually, always. And when you do it alone, others may eventually follow you, but you're going to get to the point you're doing it by yourself. That's why we say those that plow new ground always plow alone. Now, I've not plowed new ground, but I've plowed ground that hadn't been plowed in a long time, and it was just left to grow up in brambles and brush and briars. And when you do that kind of work, you do it by yourself. and other people aren't going to come and help you unless there's some economic benefit in it for them. But that's the way it is when you do right. We're talking about things here. We're back to fundamentals. And if we're waiting for somebody to join us, waiting to join an organization, it's not going to happen. It's God plus one makes a majority, but you better be sure you're right. That's the problem, of course. There are a lot of people strapping bombs around their waist in the last 30 years and pulling the lanyard and blowing themselves up because they decided they were the only one that was right. No. It's God plus one. That doesn't mean the God of Allah. That means God. That means the maker of heaven and earth and all that in them is, that will crush all other gods or perceived gods like greasy little bugs when the time comes. That's the God we worship. He's the warrior. And he's the loving God, too, which they don't have, by the way. The Quran never mentions love, not in there anywhere. No, you just obey. We have the God that's all those things. And we worship him individually. And we do what's right, and we become the leaders. You become the leader. You say, I'm going to do what's right, come hell or high water. I don't care what anybody else does. So I know that I have a duty to arm myself and to train myself in safety and marksmanship. And when you do that, here's what I think will happen from what I read in history. I think other people will watch you. And the idea then catches on. That's the way God wants it to work. By the way, it won't work any other way. You're not going to force people to follow you. No, they're going to follow you. Then they're watching you. You are a leader. And you must slowly, but confidently and surely, sure-footedly learn what it is you're supposed to do and then do it. So, yeah, it's nice to have. Now, get back to history. In England, and it was brought to America, that every land area, every bit of land area that would encompass approximately 100 able-bodied men, they called that in England 100. 100. Land area. That's what they called a land area. Then they got to calling it 100. 100. And in every 100 was a court. And they called it the 100 courts. The 100 courts were done away with in England, I think, about 1970. Amazingly. The 100 was brought to America because the 100 became the township eventually. And then the name changed, but it's still the same thing. We still have townships all over America. I do believe that only Delaware has retained her hundreds. And if you go to Delaware, just go to the internet, type in the hundreds of Delaware. You'll be amazed what you read about it, and you'll learn all about the militia. Pennsylvania was organized in hundreds, and 36 hundreds, traditionally, 36 hundreds, which would amount to 3,600 fighting men, approximately, made up a shire, which, after the Norman invasion, was called a county. And we had all that in America. That's why I still say today that the militia should be organized according to townships in America. Townships. Now, if you're the only fellow, where I come from, I know there were, in most of the townships around home, there are no towns or villages in them where I'm from, and they'd have maybe 150 voters in the township. Well, you got 150 voters in a township, you might have half of those would be males, men, and of those men, how many would be under, wouldn't be ancient in age, and wouldn't be 15 or 16? I don't know, maybe you get 50. But in a lot of townships, there'd be 400 or 500 voters, which would be 1,000 people maybe, whatever, you figure that out. But we ought to be organizing according to townships. And if you know your neighbor, now here's what they're doing at home. I'll just tell you what they're doing at home. They're getting together. Men are getting together. And they're talking about what would we do if all order breaks down. And they're making plans. They're saying, well, you can do this and you can do that. I know men at home are involved in those kind of groups. And they take inventory of what kind of medical supplies they have, first aid kits, and do we have knives? Do we have fire-making equipment? Do we have a way to get wood to people's houses so they can stay warm? These are the kind of things that the militia should know about doing. How do you keep order? Listen, when order breaks down, then people start killing each other for food. They start hating each other. And that's what the militia is there for, to stop, to fill that vacuum. And if you're talking to your buddies, talking to your friends, And the gals, of course they can be involved in this. I keep saying, I want to say it again, the gals are not part of the militia according to God. But that doesn't mean, that means that they won't answer for this, for not doing their duty to the militia. But that does not mean they cannot be involved in any way that needs to be involved. They just have a different responsibility. And that they should be as much as they can be. In fact, they will be. If order breaks down, we want to be able to take care of a country. You know, the beautiful thing about America is we have sovereign states. The beautiful thing about our break from Britain was it wasn't a revolution. Not really, no. Not in the sense of all the rest of the world, the Papal Revolution, the French Revolution. Why? We weren't trying to overthrow the government here. After we broke from Britain, nothing changed. All the courts remained the same. All the state governments remained the same. See, that's why it was successful, because we maintained the order we have. We didn't try to overthrow order. We didn't say to England, we don't want your common law. We said to England, we want your common law. The trouble is, you're trying to stop us from having it. Our common law government. What was our common law government? Separation of powers, independent courts, juries. Doesn't exist in the rest of the world. The right to remain silent. The freedom from unreasonable searches and seizures. The right to freedom of speech, to have freedom of speech in the pulpits of the churches. All those things were on the forefront of the burner to people. And they just said, we just want what we know is our inheritance as British people. That's really what they were saying. And they did. But they maintained order throughout the whole thing. That's what we're to do today. We have states, we have counties, we have townships within those counties. And then we just have little groups of folk that know each other. That's what we should be doing. You got a group of folk in your town that you can get together with. I know at home retired judges are doing this. They're getting together with people. Retired all sorts of people. It's the older guys at home that are doing it. When I say older, 50 and above. And those are the mainstay of the community, because they're the ones that are old enough to have a little bit of wisdom under their belts through experience, and they know what's important. What's important? Order. Just that there isn't complete breakdown and people don't start stealing and killing one another. And the way to do that is just to have a bunch of elderly men, elders, not elderly so much, although that's elder, but men that have a little bit of, that they're able to keep their heads when all about them are losing theirs and blaming it on them. That's the kind of folk we need in that kind of a situation, male and female. You're a militiaman, you're the leader. You're the leader. Act like it. What do you do? Well, Second Amendment is the clause that, out of our Constitution, of the four amendments, that's the clause that applies to the local militiaman. It's the only one of the four militia clauses that of our Constitution that does not grant any authority. It simply recognizes a duty that the militiaman has. What? To keep and carry a loaded gun. And that right shall not be infringed. Remember the militiamen, we the people, that's the militiamen. Those are the ones that granted the other three militia clauses in the Constitution and the duties that go with those. And that had to do with presidents of the United States. That's one militia clause. Another militia clause delegates duties to the Congress of the United States. And the third militia clause delegates duties to the state legislature of your state and the governor. And the fourth militia clause, all the Second Amendment, it delegates no duties. It recognizes a duty of the people that established these other officers through the Constitution of the United States. That covers that question. Then the trust question. That if there are people, if people have a question about trust, I have some things written on the website www.commonlawyer.com. And if you want to talk about such things, email me. If you have email from that website and send your number, if you want to discuss a particular matter. Gerard, somebody last time called from Switzerland asking about trust. I remember, but I don't remember the question. Do you?
Well, we went far afield. I don't remember where we started, but we ended up.
Me too.
She was on quite a while. Okay. I got a comment to make on what you said, though. Comments. As far as, you know, this country and the fundamental principles, And basically, that has that saying, the truth will prevail as long as someone proclaims it. So if there's one militiaman willing to proclaim the truth, guess what? He should prevail. Because he has that right, that might, that law, God on his side. So that's kind of neat. The other thing I was going to say, the most no-brainer thing in small towns, and I experienced it firsthand because I'm a life member of our volunteer fire department. They are the militia already. They have a chain of command. We have a ladies' auxiliary that help the men. I mean, we even have women that train on the firefighting equipment because, I'll tell you what, something can happen during the day when everybody's at work, but the women are around. So we want them to understand, you know, to get the truck over there and maybe even know how to put a Scott air pack in emergency. If I'm in the building and my air's running out, I don't care if it's a woman or a man that comes in there with a Scott air pack and brings me air so I don't die. But that's how these things, these local fire departments run on all the type of things that a militia would need to do, you know, and we have, and throughout the state, and I'm sure every state is like this, we have a mutual aid system where we can call people in from the other town. So to me, it's a no-brainer to set up your, you know, to start with your local fire departments as your militia guys, because they're getting together twice a month, they're doing drills, they're doing meetings, they're talking. You know, you're fighting fires with your brothers from the other town over because they're covering you with mutual aid. It's almost already there, so that's a good place to pick. I think it's a no-brainer. They have the equipment, they have the discipline, and they have most of the training. I mean, we don't train firearms, but look at emergencies, ropes, this, that, very professional. The most professional volunteer agencies that I have ever become in contact with is with the fire departments, and some are better than others, but some are impressively good for having a small fire department. It's really a great thing that people don't even talk about, but you know, that's who's covering you at night with fires and emergencies is these local volunteers. And basically, you know, if there's civil unrest and all that stuff, it's a no-brainer that they should be in your militia, or they should be part of the militia, or they should be the militia, in my mind.
No, that's beautiful, and I agree with you, and there are a lot of them around the country. I have looked into that a little bit, thinking, wow, that's a good place to start. But from what I can see on the Internet, volunteer fire departments are becoming less and less every year. And I think it's being attributed to them, people, the government, state governments, whoever, and the city governments bringing them on as full time. But the volunteer fire departments, from the very beginning, starting in New York City, they were the backbone of public order. And even when people went out west, I've read stories about the fire departments out in when the gold rush began. They became the ones that kept order in all the gold mining camps after they built them up. So that is a natural place to start. I agree, and it's already there, and I think about that often. Also, well, that's enough on that. Thanks, Gerard, bringing that up. Good point.
Okay. I kind of cut Jan off. Jan, I'm gonna re-engage you. You said there was another question you wanted for Brent. I thought, and if not, we'll move on to the next segment here of what we're going to be doing. Brett, I don't know if you had a specific subject you want to talk about. I mean, we didn't really give you a chance to do your deal, so I mean, you can feel free to start that if you have something.
Okay, no, I can do that now. Unless you had a subject you wanted me to talk about, I can say something here that.
Well, I kind of butted in three times, so I feel very satisfied at this point.
No, okay. Unloaded.
No, you know what? Certain things come up during the meeting, and sometimes you're the best guy for them, and I usually see that, and you know, and I try to engage you. So, not saying that something might not come up later, you know, where I'm going to say, hey, Brent, what do you think about that? If you're still here.
Okay, I'll try to hang on too.
We got the queue full of people here, so who knows what'll come up.
Okay. Well, let me just dive in for a few minutes, and I'll talk about what I call police state culture. Police state culture. Now, I'm going to quote a fella here who's okay. I'm going to quote a fella here who's very famous, but I'm going to say something about him, or say I'm going to quote him, because he who never quotes is never quoted, and I'm going to quote him. A smart guy, smart guy. His name was Lord John Emmerich Edward Dalberg Acton. People call him Lord Acton, but it's really Lord John Emmerich Edward Dalberg Acton. He said this: "I cannot accept your canon that we are to judge the king, unlike other men, with a favorable presumption that they did no wrong." I'll read it again. Maybe you're just getting the legs of your brain under you here. Let me read it again. "I cannot accept your canon that we are to judge the king, unlike other men, with a favorable presumption that they did no wrong. If there is any presumption," he says, "it is the other way around, against the holder of power, increasing as the power increases." Then he says this, and this is his conclusion: "There is no worse heresy than the fact that the office sanctifies the holder of it." There is no worse heresy than the fact that the office sanctifies the holder of it. Why did he say that? He said that because he was an Englishman, but he was a very staunch Roman Church votary. He was a Roman Catholic, as they say today, and he was appalled, utterly appalled, that the Pope came out and said that when his haunches were parked on the throne of the Lateran Palace, that he was preserved from speaking error, called ex cathedra. And as a Romanist, he said that can't even be true. That's why he said there is no worse heresy. He calls it a heresy, because he said that's heresy to say that, that the office sanctifies the holder of it. But it can be applied beyond the Pope of Rome. It can be applied to everyone. Does the badge of the officer sanctify his actions? Does the robe of the judge sanctify his actions? Does the uniform of the military man sanctify the general, the admiral, sanctify some of the things they do? And Lord Dalberg Emmerich Edward Acton said no, it doesn't. And then he said this: "As a man's power increases in government, the higher his position, the more we are to presume that what he has done, if there's a question, we are to presume it's wrong, and the burden's on him to presume it's right. And if it's the other way around, we're in trouble. Well, don't look now, friends, neighbors, and kin. It's the other way around. Our courts say so. We presume that the U.S. attorney is telling us the truth. And you, Mr. Indicted Man, we will not give you that presumption. We'll give the government the presumption." And they don't try to hide it. They say it. And now it has become accepted practice. The government is right, and the burden's on the other fellow to prove that the government is wrong. That was not true until the 1930s, until the socialist and communist administration of FDR. Yes, that's what he was. That's what he was. And we've been suffering from that for a long time, but I can't blame him. He's dead and gone. Everybody was there pretty much dead and gone. No sense crying over spilt milk, as they say. Our parents and our grandparents were there when it happened. It's all over now. Ain't going to do no good to complain about it. What we need to do is do something about it. Get on the offensive and do right. You, personally, you got to do right. Come hell or high water, no matter what anybody else does. You got to preserve yourself while you're doing it, too. You can't be stupid. You can't go squaring off with the evil one. I'm quoting Jesus Christ from the Sermon on the Mount. Do not, it says in the translations, do not resist evil. The word means to square off. We went into that last time. It means to square off as though you're going to overpower him. No, 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 no. Jesus said, don't do that. Be wise as serpents, harmless as doves, not force, but finesse. I'm not going to go to battle against a man that's bigger than me and he's got the drop on me with weapons. I'm not going to do that. That's foolish. No, there's other ways to deal with that kind of thing. Well, police state culture, over the past 175 years, since the time we began neglecting our militia clauses of our Constitution, Americans have gone from refusing to allow policemen to tote guns to not only allowing them to carry firearms, but in addition, tolerating mere petty bureaucrats to carry concealed weapons. Government employees, from IRS agents to BLM bureaucrats, now pack heat. Yeah, BLM. Bureaucrats, I remember. 30 years ago, I was on BLM property working out west a lot. The BLM agents would come out. They didn't pack heat. Why? The regulations didn't allow it. But now, they pack heat. Increasingly, the government is packing heat. What does that tell you? They don't want you to have a gun, but more and more and more of the 800,000 to a million federal employees are going to have guns. Consider further. Federal prison guards and local police and bailiffs have gone from dressing in pressed shirts and ties to now donning commando-style uniforms and gear. Local policemen have exchanged their dress shoes and creased dress trousers for the commando's combat boots and bloused fatigues. Nowadays, even rural county court bailiffs look more like they're outfitted for a clandestine assassination raid behind enemy lines than they are to maintain order in a county court. Such ill-advised choices foster in government employees, as well as in all others, in the eyes of others, a false and downright dangerous view of themselves and the mission, encouraging lack of restraint on their part while sending an unnecessary message of hostility toward those who pay and keep them. Those keeping government employees in regular pay, including everybody, by the way, it is impossible to be alive in America and not pay taxes. In fact, almost every time money changes hands, a tax is paid. But further, tax liability rolls downhill, to rest upon those least able to shoulder the burden. Merchants, and service providers recoup their tax payments in higher prices. It rolls downhill. Paying, everybody that pays taxes is paying to keep the police forces and the bureaucrats. But combat garb reveals a policy of intimidation, domination, and ready violence, meant to incite fear with its ever-present companion. What's the ever-present companion of fear? I'll tell you what it is, and I have lived long enough to learn this. The ever-present companion of fear is erratic behavior, which in turn gives policemen and government agents further excuse for violence. They act like they're jackbooted thugs, and they dress like it. Then people look at them differently, fearfully, and then that produces erratic behavior. That's what fear does. And then policemen have excuse for violence. Oh, yeah. The viciousness of the police state. By contrast, a pressed shirt and tie, shined dress shoes, creased trousers invite from others sincere respect, with the companion of sincere respect, thoughtful behavior. The results of this policy of bullying have been predictable and are now upon us. America jails per capita more of its own than any other country in the world, including communist China. Now, last time I looked, this has been a while, let me read to you these statistics. The percentage of our people in America jailed is in proportion to the number of crimes, so-called, invented by legislative fiat. For example, the number of federal prisoners in the year 1940, the number of federal prisoners in federal jails in 1940 was 24,360. 40 years later, in 1980, it was about the same. It was 24,257, just a little less. 1940 to 1980, the population of federal prisoners went down just a little. But 10 years later, in 1990, it had more than doubled to 60,000 prisoners. prisoners in federal prisons. And then another year, 10 years, in the year 2010, it had more than doubled again to 134,000. Finally, in another 12 years, by the year 2012, it had more than doubled again to 268,000 prisoners. This is exponential, not merely serial. In other words, it doubles every so often, every 10, 12 years. And this increase is due not to more criminals, not even to more crimes, but to more crimes by legislative fiat. In other words, the government continually declaring more behavior crimes that was not crimes before. And then add to that the policy of the police state. There's a fellow running around America. He's a shrink. What's a shrink? That's a guy that studies psychology. A shrink. It's not a science. No, it's not. It's a pseudoscience. Psychology is the fantasy that men can predict the future behavior of men by learning their conditioned responses. Oh, sometimes they're right. A lot of times they're wrong because men aren't only animals. They don't have only a spirit or a body and a soul. They have a spirit. Animals have a body and a soul. There's a difference. You can predict the behavior of an animal, but they're kind of like folk too sometimes. Sometimes they're unpredictable. What I'm mean to say is psychobabble is BS. Bottom sediment. It's an attempt of men to control other men control them in the future. That's why psychobabble now controls our courts. They bring in the shrink to evaluate the guy that's indicted because he's not thinking right. They bring in the shrink to evaluate the man that's convicted and give his evaluation to the court, and then the court does what the shrink says. Used to be that law decided those questions. Now the psychobabble BS decides those questions. No sense giving these people a break. That's the kind of attitude of policy that's destroying the law in America. It's no longer law. Well, there's a fellow running around the country. He's a shrink. Psychobabble BS. And he's teaching law enforcement officers that the right thing to do is to shoot to kill first, if any question. Shoot to kill first. And they're doing it. They're doing it all over the country. You don't even hear about it. And he's doing it. He's the one that's heading up this spearhead. He's Babylonish. No, the Bible has no part in his life. Never has had. He follows a false religion. You can read about him. I don't even remember his name. I want to forget it. He teaches doctrines of demons and is himself apparently controlled by doctrines of demons. I didn't say that. No, I'm just telling you what Paul the Apostle says about it. I'll believe what he says. I've got good evidence he's telling the truth. Well, this monopoly fosters costly activities of government, but also in destruction of freedom of association. Freedom to not only choose one's relationships, such as in business and family, but also to nurture and keep them. That's the way families are, family relationships. It is evident that the warehousing of non-dangerous men, and increasingly, amazingly, women, a phenomenon unknown in America to any degree. Well, it was mostly men in prisons always before, always, almost mostly. A lot of good reasons for that. But now it's increasingly women. And prisons destroys relationships of families, friends, business, productivity. And prison to the man that's been imprisoned, or the woman, bars or strains and then snaps the ties of otherwise productive relationships from religion and family to business and government. The criminal law industry now wages war against our freedom of association. And that's the fundamental engine from which all other rights, all other freedoms, we call them fundamental rights, duties, arise, and out of which untold wealth has overflowed our country in past decades. Out of what? Freedom of association, just freedom of association. Well, why is that important? Without freedom of association, there is no freedom of religion. Without a freedom of association, there's no business. Without freedom of association, there's no family. There's nothing. Without freedom of association, you cannot choose the God you want to associate with. That's what religion is. Religion is association with your God. Religare, it's a binding. It's a commitment of covenant, of contract. You go to the Bible. Moses read the law to the Israelites. He'd read a provision. And they would all say with one voice, Amen. That means we agree. Well, that was choosing. Joshua said, choose to Israel. He said, choose this day whom you will serve. That's freedom of association, friends, neighbors, and relatives. Freedom of association is the foundation of freedom of religion. It's the foundation of contract. It's the foundation of the right to assemble. When you assemble, you associate with other people. Without freedom of association, there is no freedom of right to assemble. Oh, it's not said often. Should be said, but it isn't. It's not taught anywhere, but freedom of association is the foundation of everything. It comes back to, choose you this day whom you will serve. Well, the police state mitigates against all that. What about this increasingly bureaucratic, gun-toting creature of the powers that be called the policeman, the government bureaucrat? Is he to blame for the police state of life in which we increasingly live? To be sure, no one has a right to do wrong. And to the extent that a policeman or a government agent is misguided in having chosen to do the unlawful bidding of his superiors, substituting their mind and will for his own good sense, which happens often, and thereby exercising unlawful force against his own people, he has allowed himself to become part of the problem, a cog in the machinery of the evil empire against freedom. Our common law, said Justice Coke, is against monopolies, and this includes any monopoly of force or violence. And that's what the government is increasingly getting. Why? Because every monopoly, whether of the economic power of trade or the raw power of military-like force, said Justice Coke, only exist by government force in restraint of individual freedom. No monopoly can exist without force or threat of government force, and that includes the monopoly of force and violence in the hands of a single will called government. That's why we have the militia of the several states, so that the government doesn't have the feeling it has all the monopoly of force and violence. If it does, it gets to doing crazy things, because anybody who has power, Lord Acton's the one that said power corrupts. This fellow I quoted a while ago, he's the one that said power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. Well, I get his principle. He's a little bit wrong because his theology was wrong. He was a Romanist. He believed that, as a Romanist, he believed that man is not tainted fundamentally at birth with the imperfection of sin. He believes man born with a clean slate. That's not true. Man is flawed at birth. And that taint, as beautiful as a baby looks, that taint inside just gets bigger and bigger. You wonder, you watch these cute little kids and they grow up to do these dastardly things. Is it their fault? Oh, it's the environment's fault. No. There still has to be that imperfection inside. Well, Acton said power corrupts. No, power doesn't corrupt. The corruption's already there. But I do agree with his conclusion, and here it is. Power exacerbates the corruption that's already in the person. You give a person power, it doesn't take long. You've seen it, and I have too. Maybe you've seen it in yourself and had to repent of it. But it'll get to you sooner or later. You give a man that much power, there has to be restraint around him. I don't care who he is. There has to be restraint. There has to be the threat of restraint. And by the way, that's what the militia of the several states is supposed to do. That's the great function of it above all functions. Our common laws against monopolies, we talked about that. And by the way, only in common law countries, of which there are only very few, is there such a thing as the militia? That should tell you something right now. Well, according to the lessons gleaned from history, stands to reason. Your freedom depends not only upon the absence of government-enforced monopolies of private trade, but also the absence of purely government monopolies such as those of raw force and violence. Our common law tradition is the backbone and the lifeblood of our Constitution. Our Constitution is a brief common law government. And it is intolerant to professional bureaucrats. That's law enforcement agents, prosecutors, which are all part and parcel of the civil law tradition, the law of the city, the foe and antagonist of our common law. In fact, professional prosecutors and armed police were never a part of the American colonist world, and even for decades after American independence from Britain, decades after, there were no police forces in America carrying guns. Not until the 1830s and the 1840s did the idea come up in the cities because of the burgeoning growth and the violence, mostly of Irish immigrants in New York City. I don't reckon it's their fault. They just piled up there, and then, of course, when you pile people up, that's like piling rats up in the same place, or manure. It gets to stinking after a while. God didn't intend for us to be piled up that way. He intended for us to spread out a little, where we can do some good. You spread manure out, it does some good, too. Take a pile of manure and spread it out on your field. It increases productivity quite a bit. The analogy stands true. First time I heard that analogy was from an Anglican priest. I mean, we're talking about a highfalutin, stuffy shirt kind of a fellow with a whole lot of clothes on that most people don't wear, especially on Sunday. And he said, clergymen are like manure. He used the analogy to talk about clergymen. You pile them all up in one place and they stink, but if you spread them out like manure, it does a lot of good. Well, I think that's true of any of us. God wants us out there doing things, getting something done. And, by the way, by yourself, defending your ground by yourself, at least the willingness to be able to. Well, where did I leave off? I was talking about, professional prosecutors and police forces. In England, professional prosecutors are still scarce, until recent times anyway. If the Crown wants to prosecute a crime, he goes hiring a lawyer. He hires them, contracts them to do it. That may have changed in recent years. I haven't checked for a long time. But London's bobbies, this is the common law tradition. See, our tradition of religion, law, and government comes from England. It's common law tradition of government, and there were no armed police forces, and the bobbies in London are a vestige of that tradition. They're very famous for that reason. In New England, armed police were uncommon until at least 1825. Simply put, the colonial's common way of life distrusted government employees with guns. Our common law tradition does not trust government employees with guns, requiring instead that the people, yeah, that's the militia, that means the militia, arm themselves. I'm going to quote James Madison, Jimmy. By the way, James Madison was a student of a Scottish immigrant to America, named John Witherspoon. John Witherspoon invited to America to be the president of what is today Princeton College. Back then it was called the College of New Jersey. Started out as a home school. Well, kind of a home school. It was a little school. It was called the Log Cabin School because it was a log cabin in the woods. And people around there sent their children to this Presbyterian clergyman. His name was Tinney, I believe, and he taught them how to read and write. Well, it got bigger and bigger, and then it became the College of New Jersey. It was a Bible college. And James Madison's favorite subject was Hebrew. And he wanted to be like John Witherspoon. He wanted to be a Presbyterian clergyman. But his constitution wasn't very strong. He broke his health going through Princeton. He went through a 4-year course in 3 years. And he didn't think he could stand up to the rigors, and his example was John Witherspoon. John Witherspoon taught more of the signers of our founding documents than any other man. He was the force, by the way, I've got to bring this up, drop a footnote, maybe I'll leave it here and get the rest later. He was the force behind the American separation from Britain, John Witherspoon. And a famous member of Parliament stood up during the time of our separation, the war with Britain. And I think I've got this, what he said the Parliament is telling. And I think I got the quote down pretty close. He said, in front of all of Parliament, during their war with the colonies, he said, Cousin America has run off with a Presbyterian parson, and that's the end of it. Cousin America has run off with a Presbyterian parson, and that's the end of it. And he was speaking of a man who was well known in Britain and America named John Witherspoon. Why isn't he talked about? Why isn't people haven't heard of John Witherspoon? Well, the reason is because he was Christian. And I don't mean just a little bit. I mean, he believed that the Bible had no errors in it. And he built his understanding of the world and government out of the Bible. And he extended it. He was a product of what people in all of Britain called the Scottish Enlightenment. What did the Scottish Enlightenment say? Well, the Scottish Reformation established first, along with the rest of Britain, all of England, that the Bible is the final rule for man, period, end of paragraph, no, nothing else. No tradition, no popes, nothing. No, the Bible. But that wasn't all of it. And then along came the Scottish Enlightenment and said, wait, what about all these laws in nature out here that we can see happening that the Bible maybe mentions but doesn't flesh out? Oh, yeah, then they got to talking about that. They got to talking about Michael Faraday, who was a Presbyterian also, just happened to be. But he's the founder of the modern science we call electricity. He belonged to a sect of Presbyterians that were so... they were so biblical, nobody would have anything to do with them. People thought they were weird. I kind of think they are, too, in some ways. But attention to the Bible is what brings creativity to the minds of men. And without that, we don't have anything. When you're looking at the Bible, you're looking at the record of the thoughts of the maker of heaven and earth. You're looking at the sentences of God. What's a sentence? It's a complete thought. I learned that in the eighth grade. That's what you've got. And when you do that, it will invigorate you like you've never been invigorated before. You'll have gumption breath, like you never had it before. Even if you're weak of body, you'll do things that you didn't think you could do. That's what the Spirit of God does through His Word. It is the Spirit that enlivens the letter. The letter of the Word is dead letter, said Paul the Apostle, without the Spirit. The Spirit is what enlivens it. And this Word, these thoughts of God, have that. And that's what we need now. We need to follow the example, as James Madison did, of this man, John Witherspoon, who, by the way, he had men that he learned from, too, and that's a long story. It always goes that way. He wasn't God himself. God used him. And we need to learn about how he used him. I'm trying to give you a glimpse of what I understand about his life. Well, that's what brought about our separation from Britain, had to do with our common law. Our common law, part of our common law, is the militia of the several states. And Gerard, I'm going to stop now and give myself a breather and go back to you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Appreciate that. Okay. Let me get my headphones hooked back up properly, and I'll start taking some questions out of the queue. Hang on. Okay. What do we have next? We have, looks like, Heather Lee from Michigan. Go ahead, Heather Lee, you're on. You've been unmuted. Heather Lee.
You unmuted me, and I muted me. This is Heather Lee. Yes, I just have a couple of comments. Thank you, Brent. That was delicious on the Word of God and the power of the Word of God. I just had a comment on the government by consent course, just to further just give inspiration to it. As I have been doing it, especially over this weekend, I'm in the middle of it, and as I read on every part of it, this morning I just began to weep because of the lack of vigilance that my generation and the generation before me and the one before that, allowing these things to come to pass. This government by consent course is excellent. It is very defined on exactly what happened, precept upon precept, line upon line. Every move that the enemy has made, the deep state, the Illuminati, every move that we the people, didn't make. And it saddens me greatly to the place where I just bowed before the Lord and wept. It really was very difficult just to realize the truth of the matter that this had been stolen from us. So it takes eternal vigilance, as it says in the Course, to reclaim and stand your ground and be cocked and loaded, if you will, armed and dangerous with the principles of truth. And so that's just my comment tonight. The other thing I had was I was wondering if the committee had ever heard of a book called Trinity, Break Ye My Commandments. Have you ever heard of that?
No, that's news to me.
It is a case of Willis Timothy Gridley out of Albany, New York, over a parcel of land that Albany is sitting on. And it started in 1635, and the fight has been on ever since. It was an inheritance of a woman named Auntie Jane Bogardus in that family. And it is quite the case. This Willis Timothy Gridley was the attorney in the 1930s fighting for this family and over this parcel of land because it was literally stolen through these false and bogus courts down through the annals of time. And now it's a very valuable piece of land. I don't have to tell you that. Any part of Albany is. And this man was disbarred because of it and put together this very large book, and it has every jot and tittle, every part of proof of theft in the courts, and it's a fantastic display and proofing of what these bogus, false, treasonous courts have done. So anyway, I'm sending it to Brent for his review because it's just, it's been put in my hands. There are only 2,500 of these books made, printed, and they have maps and everything. And it's this man stood for truth and righteousness on behalf of his family. And he was an attorney, and he saw what the courts were, what they had turned into. And I think that the book is just a prime example of the proof of the horrors of and the tyranny of the Admiralty Court. And through down through the annals of time even. And unfortunately, even in the Church of Jesus Christ, because it started with Trinity Church. And I tried to look up to see if there was a Trinity Church in Albany, and the only one that I saw was a United Methodist, Trinity United Methodist. But I have a sneaking suspicion that Trinity turned into a monster because they deceived and lied and stole through their prestigious members of these people's inheritance. And it's no different for those who are those saints in light who have the inheritance in Jesus Christ here on earth, that we need to stand and not back down and participate and be involved and be proactive and vigilant. Because if you're, it says in the Word of God, you know, Satan is like a roaring lion, you know, roaming about, seeking, hunting, whom he may devour. And if you're just sitting there and doing nothing, you're fair prey, if you will. And so I just encourage everyone to take note of this and stand up for your rights and stand up for what God gave to you. And cease and desist from sitting in front of the TV set on your hand. And I don't say that in without love. Okay, or looking at myself. All right, just an encouragement.
Thank you, Heather Lee.
God bless you.
I appreciate that. And I appreciate all the emotions you're going through. And I think back on the different times when certain things became revelation to me. I learned a lot from my parents. I always respected them a lot. You know, they seemed ahead of their times. But then, as I got older, I was like, how come when this happened or that happened, you guys didn't protest? And they couldn't tell me why. Like, look at, you know, they went to, my parents knew a lot of things that a lot of people didn't know. They knew, you know, what the CFR was, the Trilateral Commission, way, way ahead of the general public. But yet, when Kennedy gave that speech, and then he ended up dead, you know, like a week later or 2 weeks later,
yep.
Why didn't these people of my parents' generation have a fit and go crazy? I mean, he laid it out. He said what he was going to do. But yet, and there were other things like that. But you see what happened already for my parents, that they were subverted through the school system, and they were taught not to question authority. And they were taught to be somewhat of a robot. And they thought they were taught my government right or wrong. These were things that crept into their education that caused them to be, even though they knew something was wrong and they couldn't put their finger on it, and they dared not speak out about it, you know, in the way that it should be, I think. And that probably went back to their parents, if you really want to start pointing fingers, you know what I mean? So it's a generational thing that they, and the evil, the forces of evil are very patient. You know, they make long-term plans, 100 years, 200 years into the future. We don't do that. The closest culture that does that is like Japan. Japan, you know, you won't go in and buy a company in Japan because it's family-oriented and they have plans well out into the millennium, and that's just the way they are because they've had dynasties that lasted hundreds of years over there. And that's one of the ways they did it is because everybody was on the same page, you know. But, I was always very, you know, I always thought very highly of my parents' knowledge. But then I see that they were also duped into inaction, not knowing what to do because they were not taught. They were not taught like the courses that we have at NLA that teaches the people where their power is, the power of nullification, the power of the grand jury and indictment, and you know, even recall through the committee man and stuff. So it's been going on a long time, and
I believe it's subliminal propaganda that
absolutely.
Has trickled in through the media slowly but surely. Like you said, the enemy is very, very patient.
Right. So, and don't forget, like my parents, they went through the Second World War and they went through the Depression, and those things were very traumatic in a certain sense. And then you had these people like Roosevelt that you know, people thought was a god, and really he was nothing but a communist, you know, dyed in the wool. He was a wolf in sheep clothing. He was, you know, all the stuff he did. But you know, they think he's a hero. He got us out of, you know, the depression.
But all those things were planned.
Absolutely.
Those are planned
wars.
Yes,
I know. Yeah.
And those are planned depressions.
Yeah.
And those are planned to manipulate the people.
There hasn't been, in my opinion,
and that's the truth of that.
Just war since the Revolutionary
yeah.
War. You know. But I don't want to, we got a lot of people to go through, but that was a good observation. We appreciate it. Thanks. Okay, I'm going to unmute Jim. Jim, you are unmuted. Go ahead.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yep.
Very good. So I arrived home this evening to a letter from the Ninth Circuit, or a case that I've been defending myself against with the IRS. And they have ruled against me. Again, and I'm wondering at this juncture what my options are. I've joined your case already against the IRS. One of the things that's kind of disturbing about this Ninth Circuit decision is that I submitted via 60B motions into the original case evidence of fraud on the part of the IRS. They had filed about $10 million worth of liens against me in the county recorder's office, all of one of which were unsigned. And then, of course, in their certification in the case itself, they used a forged signature of someone who was through a Freedom Information Act request that I received. The signatures didn't match on the bottom of their certification. And then on top of that, they used to calculate the supposed money that I owed them, they used substitute for returns, which of course are not allowed for 1040 income tax filings. And I'm wondering what, like I say, if I should try and just appeal this to the, well, actually I have an opportunity to, I guess, get a rehearing in front of the, a panel of 12 judges instead of 3 that decided the case, or should I appeal it directly to the Supreme Court, or should I throw in the towel and give up?
Well, that's an awful lot on my shoulders.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know what, I don't feel qualified to tell you what to do, except, look, you're fighting a good fight. Now, you know, the times that we found ourselves in court, there was always that debate. Do I go jump up to the higher court right away, or do I take my swats in the lower court? And the idea being that, you know, if you're taking your swats in the lower court, you might actually prevail at some point, God forbid, right?
Right. But, well, so given that I'm in California and this is a decidedly communist state, and the Ninth Circuit is a decidedly communist court, you know, I'm wondering if it's worth the fight.
I can give you, I think, who was it, St. Paul in the Bible? He said, why do you go to their courts looking for justice?
Right, exactly.
And that's what you're doing. Yeah. You're in the, you know, you come into my parlor, said the spider to the yeah. fly. So, yeah, first of all, the Ninth Circuit is like, you know,
yes,
talk about.
No, that goes without saying.
I would never tell you to give up, especially now, because we're getting close to all that baloney maybe going away. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
I mean, they're just rest assured, they're not going to lie down until they're made to lie down. They're like a mad dog. And until somebody shoots a tranquilizer in their neck, they're not going to lay down, you know?
Okay.
And so they're going to go to the bloody end, and they're not going to be convinced until some of them end up hanging from a noose, and then maybe they'll behave. I don't know. But I would look at, you got to get it out of that court. I mean, the trouble with going up to, I mean, in order, let's see, how many appeals is your next appeal is only to the Supreme Court? That's right off the bat. That's the highest court, right?
Yes, I can request. I think I can request a rehearing as long as in front of a panel of 12 appellate judges, as long as let's see, what did they say? Yeah, a panel rehearing. The party should seek panel rehearing only if one or more of the following grounds exist. And the problem is that I challenged their jurisdiction, and the fact of the matter is they still continue, even though I have filed papers showing that I'm a state citizen, they refuse to accept that and continue to try and impose their jurisdiction upon me. So I don't know what else I can do. I know there's various things to establish so-called sovereign status, but the reality of that is that, you know, if I was born in the state of California, my birth certificate shows that, there should be no more need to establish anything above and beyond that.
Yeah, and they're so bad, and so they're not going to recognize that, you know. Like I said, you're going to have to drag them kicking and screaming. Yeah. However, I mean, even the Supreme Court right now, I mean, there's a couple judges up there that are bad, bad.
Yeah.
And, you know, they hated Anton Scalia. He was one judge, and one good man in that position gave them so much trouble.
Right.
They had to get rid of him because...
Well, that's why they killed him.
Yeah, because, again, the truth will prevail as long as somebody proclaims it, and that's what he did. And that was very damaging and put a lot of brakes on their agendas.
Yeah.
So I don't know, you know, there's going to be a couple more leaving. I don't know when, but in the same token, and there's a lot of stuff going on right now.
Right.
Of course, they don't have to hear every case. They only hear what they want to hear. So which I don't know what your chances are of getting into that particular court. You know, I mean, I think I would go with the 12 judges. You've never had a jury trial on this, though, right?
That is correct. In fact, I never even got a hearing. The original district court judge, I basically requested that she provide her, you know, proof of jurisdiction or power and standing, and she basically issued a summary judgment against me while we were still in discovery. And of course, at that point, I didn't have any of the information that I later submitted into the case. And I suspect that the appellate judges never bothered to review my, you know, are you familiar with FRCP 60B?
I can guarantee you they didn't even read it.
Yeah, I'm
because
sure
that's the nature of that beast.
Yeah.
You know,
and it basically the IRS case is replete with fraud. From the liens that have been filed against me to the fact that the certification was done by a person whose signature doesn't match the printed name or the signature of the person who signed the certification document doesn't match the FOIA requested signature that was provided to me by the IRS.
Right.
And then on top of that, I submitted portions of my master file into the case, which clearly show that there was no, for the 1040 income tax, there was all zeros. But what the IRS did is they filed substitute for returns, that's what an SFR is, which is, even by their own rules, is not allowed for 1040 for income tax. And I pointed all that out in my appeal brief, but it was basically ignored.
If they even read it. As far as they're concerned, they got a label on the top of your file somewhere, and it probably says something like sovereign citizen, and that turns your mind.
In fact, the district court judge called me that, and I recused her for prejudice, and she's still deciding issues on my case.
You gotta get rid of those people however you can. And I don't know how savvy you are in court. It sounds like you know quite a bit of stuff, but you know, if you're gonna go to, you probably stand a better chance with a jury trial if you're allowed to wadate a jury and pick, you know, or disqualify whoever, because I assume you're doing this yourself, you know, in your own person, right?
Yep.
So then you get to act like the opposing attorney. So, you know, if you get to pick a jury, that's maybe your saving grace. It's not easy. You have to be savvy. But look, if you get a certain amount of people, the right people on that jury, and you explain things to them,
you know,
they're going to listen to you better than some establishment judge who's been taught that the Constitution doesn't belong in his court. Right. You know what I mean? Right. So I would rather have my chances with a jury of 12 that I could actually educate. And, and I don't know if you ever saw the movie Freedom to Fascism.
Absolutely, Aaron Russo. Sure, I have.
Right.
Yeah,
when that jury got a hold of that stuff, they were blown away.
Yeah.
Weren't they? So.
But here's my question. Well, my problem is I'm already in the appeals process. How can I get back? I've never had a trial, so how do I get back to a point where I can get a jury trial?
Well, there's so much fraud that went on in your case, and the whole summary judgment thing, it should have never taken place.
Right.
That's a definite.
Yeah, I pointed that out in Trinzi versus Pagliaro shows that, you know, the government cannot submit or move for a summary judgment on cases where they're taking property, et cetera, et cetera. And yet they completely ignored those, everything that I posted in the case.
Right.
Yeah.
See, they're going to fight you hard because they don't want a jury trial if they can help it because they don't have the control that they like to have.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and there's other strategies that you could have used, but look at right now you're in their court, and there are certain things that you want to do to stay out of their court. And I mean, you've missed some of those things because you came in and you kind of acquiesced
And this is no. I'll admit. I mean, this has been quite a learning experience.
Absolutely.
Kind of an altruistic view of the judicial system. I thought I could get a fair shake, but as I discovered, that's not the case.
We've been in and out of the courts a lot of times for a lot of years now, and you know, we in the beginning we held the hope out that there would be some judge that we would run across that would hold to the rule of law, and we haven't found it. I mean, we've come close, and don't get me wrong, in certain situations we've had successes in the lower courts, in the Supreme Court, because the judge, you know, because we were there and there was a process that took place, and the judge had some place to hang his hat.
Uh-huh.
And he ruled, you know, I won a pretty good case against the credit card company, and the judge ruled without prejudice in my favor based on those fundamental things that I was demanding that they show that they could. And they were such a bunch of screw-ups that it got to the point, it was embarrassing. The attorneys for the other side, everything they did was like so out of whack. And I guess, you know, with all the craziness that went on over the couple of years that I was in there, but I mean, I was only actually in a, litigation where we were meeting in the judge's chambers until it led up to a trial date. You know, that whole process lasted about, you know, the better part of a year, you know, because basically there was paperwork that went back and forth and it sat. And of course, you know, I didn't know what to do. I was stalling and I was learning how to go into court. And, you know, I and John and I were doing paperwork, and a couple other people at that time, we were just learning how to write papers. But anyway, it ended up turning out all right for me, and I think it was due to the perseverance and the fact that I was able to woo the judge over to my side. Because don't forget, court is nothing more than a show where you get to put your show on, you know,
even for the
jury. So if the guy that puts on the best show wins, I don't care if you're innocent or guilty, you got to put the show on. So you got to know how to litigate. So that's why it's hard to give you advice, because it's your shoes you're standing in. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Exactly. I can't stand in your shoes or I tell you exactly what to do, but, you know, you have a couple of options here, and, you know, the trouble is, you know, certain steps you can't go back. Now, I do believe you can go back and get a jury trial if you so want in the lower court for whatever good that's going to do you. I don't know, you know, some of this stuff, you can go after the judge personally. You can sue the judge personally. They won't like that.
Right.
But you know, if you got the charges that they did fraud to get you where you are, which you do, you have all that.
Yep.
You got to decide though. Look, you got a lot of stuff, and the trouble is if you go after all of it, they're going to think you're nuts and they don't want to hear it. They get overwhelmed. And look, they give you so many targets to shoot at. Don't get obsessed with hitting them all. That's a mistake, and we used to do that. We used to throw everything against the wall to see what would stick.
That was sorry to interrupt, but that was my original strategy in the district court, and I think that's come back to bite me. I tried to focus it more towards the jurisdictional issues, actually, because that was on advice of an IRS attorney who had told me, on the recommendation of Paul Andrew Mitchell, said, go talk to this guy. And they looked over my stuff and said, yeah, go use the jurisdictional thing and go after him with that, because they don't have jurisdiction over you.
Isn't that funny? Because that's exactly what John would have told you. We're always challenging the jurisdiction because it's obvious they don't have it.
Yeah. Now, so let me ask you this. There is, I may just do the petition for rehearing. Do you know of any ironclad way to make them, sit up and notice, I'm an American national. I'm not a freaking federal employee.
No, you know what? They're not at this point right now. They're death afraid. That's like a death. They don't want to recognize that, because if they recognize it for you and specifically that issue, what they're basically doing is giving all of us our freedom back at that level, at the federal level. You see, if they're going to recognize that you're an American national and you've kicked out of their system and they don't have the jurisdiction for sure and all that stuff, uh-huh. It's easier in the lower courts to give you your remedy than it is in the higher court, because they don't have as much authority as far as setting precedent goes. Yeah. And sometimes the if you've got a really nice case that you've written nicely, a lot of times the federal judge will kick it back to the state and tell them, get rid of this case, I don't want it up here, because he doesn't want it, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And he'll tell them to get rid of it any way they can, even to give you your remedy. Yeah. So, I don't know what else I can advise you, but, that whole trying to get them to say uncle with that particular, I'm an American national thing. I don't think that's going to work, and they're going to use it against you, because they're going to just keep hammering on that sovereign citizen thing.
Right. Right.
And you know, they're getting schooling from the Southern Poverty Law Center, basically, which is a joke, but they're communists.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
So, I would stay away from that. I understand where you're at, and I understand that you understand it. But they're actually taught that that is baloney, that they shouldn't listen to that, they shouldn't entertain it, they shouldn't give it any course in their, and they're afraid to do it, because, if they allow you to do that, their own peers will come out after them,
Okay.
So, I mean, I don't know what else to tell you. I mean, you may want to call up Brent, common lawyer, and put your name in and talk to him for a bit, because, he's had some experience in federal court and he could tell you some of the pitfalls, but. I always tell everybody I know just enough to make me dangerous, so I wouldn't tell you that I would fill your paperwork out or anything. I mean, I would do certain things for myself because it only affects me, you know what I'm saying?
Sure.
But for me, I mean, and like I said, I mean, I'm the advice I give you, I try to give you the best advice to my ability, but it's not the only answer, and I certainly defer to certain people, and I've never stood in I shouldn't say that. We have gone to federal court with a IRS thing for John, and we actually did good in that one. But I think those are the exceptions rather than the rule. Not only was it due to a certain knowledge, it was also due to a certain grace of God. The way some of the situations worked out, God stuck his finger in there, and they were stymied by it. I mean, there was certain decisions that. We did. We weren't even sure of it, and I can only say divine providence entered into those decisions on our part that ended up having us prevail. That's a big part of it. You know what I mean? You want to keep yourself spiritual and holy, and proclaim God, because he's the one when you're in the battle that you want to be calling to. So
one last point I'll mention was that, and a part of this is that. I probably have a target on my back because I'm a good pal of Joe Bannister. I don't know if you know that.
Oh, yeah.
He and I have been buddies for a while, and we made the local IRS office look pretty bad here.
Oh, well, you're done, buddy. No.
Well,
I love Joe Bannister.
I mean, it's funny. He's been able to walk away pretty much unscathed from a lot of this stuff, but everybody who was associated with him has gone down in one way, shape, or form.
Well, that's another strategy. You see, they're using him to scare the rest of us. They said, okay, we won't get you. I'll tell you what. You go ahead, but everybody you talk to and everybody you associate with, you're going to be like a pariah to them.
Yeah.
And that's what they decided to do with him, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, because the only other thing they could do is murder him, and then that makes a martyr out of him, and they're smarter than that these days.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
So. All right. Hey, well,
yeah, I would try to get a hold of Brent on some of this stuff as far as the federal court goes, because he knows more about those procedures than I do.
Okay.
I don't know. You know, I would feel better with a jury trial, but, you know, it's not, if you never picked a jury and never wanted a jury and stuff, it's quite a traumatic thing. I mean, it could be fun if it wasn't your life on the line.
Right,
you know?
Exactly. Yeah. Possessions.
Yeah. So I don't know where you're at as far as standing up for yourself. I get the feeling that you've been through some of the schools of hard knocks like we have, but
yeah.
I don't know if I would give you the litigator's badge just yet, you know?
No, I don't think I'm quite there yet. Definitely.
Right. So you know, you have to move along, and, you know, I mean, and asking advice like you are tonight is good to get your head straight, to kind of it's good to talk to other people, get other perspectives. But I would definitely defer to Brent.
Right. Okay.
And John might even have some good advice for you in private himself that
okay.
he wouldn't be able to give you, you know, on the air, because they're vicious. You know what I mean?
Absolutely are. I understand. Okay.
Okay.
Well, you guys keep up the good work, and I love the show. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Bye.
Okay. We got, I don't know who this is. It's a 347 area code. You've been unmuted.
Yes, hello. This is Marvin from Brooklyn.
Hey, Marvin.
How you doing?
Good.
I'm calling in reference to a situation I have in Eastern District Court here in New York City. I had a it's related to a foreclosure, and it was an appeal. They kind of allowed the opposing parties to get a dismissal based on a claim upon which I don't know, you know, they can't respond to. What is that phrase that they use?
Default?
No, it's not a default.
Failure
to state a claim upon which.
Failure to state a claim, okay.
Right,
yeah,
now, so I was just, I'm trying to get some idea. I mean, I'm not even sure what that's all about, and I might need a little assistance in how to address that issue. A failure upon claim, how to respond to a failure upon claim in which, you know, state a claim upon which they can respond to. I mean.
So, wait a minute. This is a foreclosure. They sent you paperwork and.
This was my complaint in a foreclosure related issue. I was asking the bank to respond to some questions and telling them that, hey, one of your agents have engaged in some type of fraud here. I mean, this company in which that you took over 2 years prior, they come in the name of a company that doesn't even exist. It's been defunct for 2 years. I sent them a notice of fraud telling them this. I sent them a notice. Listen, are you aware that an agent of yours is coming, is suing me in state court in the name of a company that you took over 2 years prior? It's been defunct for 2 years. And they kind of, you know, they went like, we don't know anything about that. That's your problem. We don't want to have anything to do. So I sued them in I sued the actual bank that took it over in federal court, saying,
right,
listen, you have to respond to these questions that I'm asking you. because you have a certain degree of responsibility to respond.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these things called the National Banking Act also is codified and I think is Title 12, you know. And so I made this complaint against them in federal court. Listen, I'm demanding that they respond to this because clearly you can't come into a name. One of your agents is coming in the name of a company that you took
so over. So the federal court responded to you that you failed to state a claim.
Yes.
Yeah,
and I'm trying to appeal that decision.
Yeah, it's hard without seeing your paperwork, but you know, they'll wiggle out of something. Like when you go to federal court, you wanna stick to the fundamental damage, the breach of your rights. You can't get into the minutiae of the case because that gives them wiggle room to get out.
Yeah.
In other words, they only have a limited jurisdiction up there to rule on where your rights were damaged. Not so much on the fraud that was done to you by this bank and the way that they're conducting business and all that.
Yeah.
That the federal court doesn't care about that because it's none of their business. They're, you know what I mean? What you're going up there for is the violation of your due process, and you need to stick to that because they'll wiggle out just like you just said. They'll say, oh, you failure to state a claim. What they mean is you fail to state a claim on something that we would have jurisdiction over or that we could rule over. You know, they're not going to help you at all.
Right.
They're going to look to get rid of you. And
okay.
So that was the way of kicking you out. Look, you're bringing up subjects that nobody wants to talk about. So any way that they can get you out of there, they will. So if you went on too long in your affidavit or your whatever statement that you put in,
yeah.
If you made it too broad and you got into other stuff, that gives them an area to wiggle right out. You know,
okay.
And so that's probably what they did without seeing your paperwork. I can't say for sure, but I'll bet you.
Yeah.
They don't want to rule on this stuff either. You know?
I agree. That's
so,
exactly what it seems like.
Know. Look, it's a learning experience, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know what
okay.
else to say.
So now my question is, can I address those issues in the appeal? Can I refer to those issues in the appeal? Because I had to put an appeal in, this failure to upon a claim. I mean,
you put an appeal in for the federal ruling of failure to state a claim.
Exactly. Now I'm left with the task of supporting that appeal.
The thing is if you get too much into the other case, they're going to do the same thing.
Okay.
You know what I mean? If you get into all the minutiae of what went on in the lower court, you want to kind of laser focus it. Look at let's say you made a jurisdictional challenge and they didn't answer it. You don't want to get into everything else. You want to stick to that because that's what that court's authority is.
Okay.
Saying, yes, his due process right were violated. They're not going to want to talk about, you know, the other fraud that was done to get you in there because,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's not really what their job is. And that
okay.
that really should have been fought out in the lower court, not in the federal court. Look at their power. We don't want to give them any more power than they should have anyway. And
okay.
and they're the first ones to tuck and run when they don't want to make a decision. It's out of work, you know. So all I can do is advise you to be very laser focused at the federal level. You know you can get a little wider at the local, you know, on the local level because they have more authority to make, you know, to make rulings on that stuff. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh. Right.
So anyway,
okay. So in my appeal, I should just focus maybe closely on how maybe they violated some constitutional issue or like due process, like you said.
Right, right. And look at when that lower court judge, when she did a summary judgment on you, that was like way out of the park right there.
Yeah.
You know, that's the one you should have moved to federal court right there. On
oh,
her.
You're talking about on the state level.
Yeah, but you could have brought it into the federal court because that was a violation of your due process.
Yeah, yeah.
But she did that. She jumped in and, you know, there was no hearing, there was no trial, there was nothing, right?
Yeah.
And she
right.
just turns around and makes a summary judgment, which they advise judges not to do that because that's turning it more into a chancery court, you know, where the judge is judge, jury, and executioner, so to speak, you know. They're
right.
supposed to refrain from doing that except for in very narrow parameters, and I don't know what her excuse was or what the other side gave her to make her feel comfortable to do that, unless she's just a bought and paid for shill, which happens a lot of times in the lower courts, and they don't care because they're getting paid so good to violate everybody, you know what I mean? They make them certain promises that these people will do any, will sell their souls for, apparently. So, you know, pick the most constitutional issue you have and kind of stick to that, laser focus it, don't get too wide, and don't get into all the minutia about everything else, and take another stab at it that way, you know, or try to do it, you know, to laser it more in your appeal if you can. I don't know. And I would definitely talk to Brent about, you know, that whole federal court thing, about writing a paper to go in there and see what he thinks.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
That'll work. All right.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
We got Terry from New Jersey. Go ahead, Terry.
Hi. I was thinking about one thing that, along the lines of, you know, contacting people at the firehouse and that type of thing, is one idea that Lydia and me were talking about, because of all the corruption that we've exposed in, or we have uncovered, we haven't so much exposed, is that one of the ways you might want to do it is to start contacting the American Legion post in the area and, you know, give them a little presentation. I think those are people that we should be talking to. And there's like an American Legion post in just about every town. I was really kind of surprised when I was looking at them up. And it had the phone numbers and, you know, contacts. So I think that would be a good idea. And maybe what we could even do is kind of draft a presentation that we could, you know, use as a template to go and talk to them about what's going on in these courts.
Actually, Terry, when we were talking about doing committees of safety and that, and the suggestion, and I think I was one of the ones that brought it up, that we should go to the gun clubs and the American Legions in the area and give presentations. And I believe that John made up a video for that. John and Ron Flick and that we had a video that we were going to go around to the gun clubs and to the firehouses with. And I'm sure, I'll see if I can get you a copy of that, see what you think about it. And yeah, maybe we could resurrect that and pass it around, because, you know, a lot of work went into it, and it may be able to be modified a little bit, you know what I mean? But it's mostly all there. We'll have to talk to Jan and Ron, and I don't know who has it, but I know it's there, and I know it's something that they worked on, and it's sitting somewhere, and it might be perfect for what you're talking about. Matter of fact, I know it is. Right.
Yeah, because, you know, you can't exactly call them, you know, crazy sovereign citizens, you know. You know, not only the American Legion, but the VFW. And these people, I think, would be very receptive to what we're talking about.
Yeah, especially since you're coming in with a militia issue. It's a Second Amendment issue. And generally speaking, they're big on that. Gun clubs and the American Legions and any kind of VA centers or anything like that, those type of people should certainly understand that part of the Constitution, you know, and be receptive to those things, which, you know, and we got an awful lot of good material on the website, and of course, that also melds in with the county sheriff at some point, and we have some good stuff to introduce, you know, with and for the county sheriff along those lines. But I agree. I think like American Legions and places like that is a good place to start. And although as of late, a lot of those American Legions around here have closed up. The members are getting old and dying off, and they're not getting new people in. And the chapters are getting closed. It's really kind of discouraging to see what's gone on the past 20 years. The local one here, well, there's more than one, but there used to be like let's say, one in my town and one in the town up. And there was one in every town almost. That's not the case anymore, you know.
Well, I don't know about where you are, but in New Jersey, I was pleasantly surprised at all of these American Legion posts, but I don't know how active they are. But I think that one of the things that they don't realize is what can and may very well happen to them is, like, with regard to my father's estate. My father was a former Marine, and he's, like, you know, the kind of person that you would want to have as a citizen. I mean, you know, he was a vice president of the Board of Education, former Oakland Taxpayers Association,
right,
Boy Scout leader, all this stuff. And that did nothing, you know, to protect him from having his estate stolen, and even worse, have criminal charges filed against me in order to steal it. And people have no idea the history of the Bar Association as a private enterprise which has basically usurped the judicial system.
Yep, and that's one of the suits that we're writing up against the Bar Association is exactly that. It's terrible, but you know, I think in the cities more so than out here in the country, what happened over here is, you know, those American Legion posts and stuff were very, very strong in the 50s and 60s and 70s. But as time went on, the kids grew up and moved out of the area, and they didn't. And the older folk, they died off, and there was nobody. They didn't hand it down to the youth, and so they ended up closing a couple of them because they had to consolidate them because they didn't have enough new people, new blood coming in. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and I think down in New Jersey, you know, there's more of a tight-knit, that, you know, like a lot of the families are still in the same neighborhoods. They didn't have to, around here they had to move out to find work, you know what I mean? That was the problem, that they grew up and they moved away looking for work. And where did they go? Well, they went to New Jersey, they went to New York City, you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, I don't know. Maybe some people are coming back in with all the never-ending wars that we've got going on.
Well, that is happening. There's a lot of people buying property around here. But my point is that you know, we have a lot of problem. We have a perception that upstate, you know, downstate New York runs upstate New York, and we don't have any say. But meanwhile, you go into Jersey and Long Island and all these places, and there is a lot of American Legions, and there's lots of volunteer firemen, and there's lots of these groups that should be patriotic by nature, and that's where they are. So really, I would expect the cities like Jersey and New York City and all these different places down in Long Island, that they could actually take the lead on this because they have the infrastructure and they have the people that are there, and those their organizations are still alive, I guess is what I want to say. They're still viable, you know? So
yeah, and there's a lot of them. I was, like I said, surprised. I didn't realize how many there were.
Yeah.
New Jersey is a very densely populated state, so it wouldn't take too long to hit a lot of these posts and maybe get some people together, go in, you know, do a presentation, you know. I think that would work.
Well, when John and I were traveling around, we were doing PowerPoints and giving talks. There's a magic number to the amount of minutes that you can do a PowerPoint for, and so you got to keep them. You can't get them too long because you lose people. So there was a couple we did, which even the ones we were using for what we were doing could be modified for exactly what you're talking about, to go around and actually do that. And then, you know, you don't want it to be much longer than a half hour, your PowerPoint, you know,
right?
And because then you want time to do questions and answers afterwards of that. And so, no, and it's very hard to get more than an hour anyway in front of these groups. They want you kind of, they got their own business to do, and you're up against their, you know, one of the beefs we had was, you know, this is to save the nation, and why don't they just, you know, they have a meeting and they got a group coming in. Why do they should do their business before we get there. It should only take a few minutes, pay the bills, whatever you got to do, and give us the whole meeting time, because a lot of this stuff requires that. So, but anyway, we couldn't always get that. I mean, very few places would give you the whole meeting because they didn't understand the power. But maybe after we got done, they did. And you know, they might actually invite you back to learn more. You could get them over to the website or something like that. But generally speaking, you want a shorter PowerPoint, you know, as short as possible, which is no more than a half hour. And I believe we have a couple of them. And you should try to get a hold of them, maybe Jan. I'll ask John, after, you know, once I talk to him after the meeting, if those are available. Maybe we can send them to you. You can look at them and see what you think is will fit, you know, and maybe we can get something going. Like John mentioned tonight, you know, we can have a committee where you're not doing it alone by yourself. Let's get 5 or 6 people or 10 people working with you. And look, at if we get something good, that then it's worth traveling around for. We used to do that, you know, years ago. We haven't done it lately because, you know, we're kind of focused in a different area, but I don't see why we couldn't do that again for, you know, the right results, you know what I mean? The right mission. But anyway, my goodness, it's already 12:04, and we got a whole line of people in here, and I'm not going to get to everybody, unfortunately. Yeah. Boy, I don't know. I get started here, I'll never stop. I hate leaving this many people in the queue, and there's quite a few. 1, 2, 3, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. We got an even dozen that are hanging out and waiting. I don't know if I should pull straws or what. It's already 5 after. Anyway, look, at I'm gonna open up California Fred for a short. California, I know you got a statement to make, so go ahead and make it. And if I don't get to the people I don't get to, I'm gonna tell you come back next week and get in early.
Can you hear me, Gerard?
I do. Go ahead.
Oh, I've got a lovely young lady here that's having CPS trouble.
Oh, well, yeah, there's a lot of that going on.
Yeah, is NLA addressing CPS?
We have put those cases on our case. We had quite a few of them here like a year or so ago. There's tons of them. They're all tragic. They're all horrible. You know, they're all depressing, the stuff that goes on. And I mean, look, we know that a lot of what goes on in CPS is a child trafficking problem. That's what's going on. You know, they're stealing the children, and there's all kinds of horror stories. And yeah, we do address that. I mean, look, at it. She can take her case. She could. I would advise this woman to go to our intake place where you fill paperwork out, Trouble with Bags. I think there's still a CPS one there, and fill out her affidavit and at least get it into us, and then she could make them aware that it's going into our amicus brief, and that we're naming names and we're putting that on notice. It's going to go into this major case. Sometimes if you play it right, you can, you know, that will buy her some more time and clout, you know what I mean? They know that she's not going to just lay down and take it. You know, I mean, the only other thing I can advise you is, you know, you can get out of, you can appeal your case from CPS to the higher courts, and they don't like that, but they've got nothing they can do, especially if you can charge somebody in there and sue them in a higher court. See, the you got to get it out of the family court. That's the problem, because they give them broad leeway to violate your rights. And so if you can call them on the carpet and bring them out of that court, we've done that before. You know, when we were actually working on a case for somebody that was a friend of ours, and we went into those courts, and boy, they they couldn't get us out of there quick enough. They didn't know what to do with us, and they didn't like that paperwork coming in. They're not used to that, because you know usually you have an attorney, and the attorneys get in the back room with the judge, and then they make deals, and it's usually based on whose money they can steal. You know what I mean?
Thank you for that advice. Yes.
So I would go tell the best thing I can tell her without getting into the case is go in and fill out the intake form and make the you know, because you're going to have to write an affidavit, and that's going to tell your story, and you're going to stick just to the facts. You're not going to do conclusions of law. When you go in there, it will tell you how to fill the affidavit out, but she'll actually get help from somebody, you know, as far as how to do that, you know, and that could be the start of her getting out of that court, you know.
Well,
you know, I mean, we can't do her case specifically for her, but the fact of her going through our process and filling out the affidavit and filing and having it filed with our case, and then she could give them copies to that, and they'll get notices to that. That might be enough, but you know, if she's not savvy, I mean, John's advice is going to be to get it out of the family court, if you know, if she can, however she can. Okay.
Gerard.
Yeah.
I am with you 100% on everything you said. She is really appreciating the fact that you're even paying attention to her. I'd like to summarize her case a little bit so you get the picture.
Mm-hmm.
She was pushing her kid in a shopping cart in a store, and a wheel broke off, and the shopping cart tipped over, and the kid got some bruises. She took him to the hospital. The next thing you know, CPS gets a call from the doctor. That's the whole nightmare right there.
Gee, sounds more like a case for a lawyer an injury case almost. Oh my goodness gracious, another nightmare.
Injury attorneys don't want to touch it because of the CPS involvement.
Yeah.
Also, the police didn't investigate. She'd been trying to get a copy of the video in the store.
Oh,
nobody...
I knew which camera angles had it.
Ah.
I knew what aisle it happened. I did everything with my record keeping.
This is a case for Belle Ives to jump on.
I'm telling you, I don't normally. I get a rash when I tell people to go to a lawyer, because I know how some of this goes. But look, a good lawyer in a case like this could be so invaluable. He has to be somebody that's not afraid to go after, you know, them with the CPS and that type of stuff. You know what I mean? You know what a good lawyer will do, in my mind? He sues everybody. He sues the grocery company, he sues the CPS, he sues the cop, he sues everybody, and then let them point fingers at each other.
Yeah, okay, so we're going to go to the intake, fill it out?
Fill it out, because that's going to get your head in a good place to become proactive, or, you know, you don't want to be reactive. You want to be on the, you want to be on the attack. You don't want to be, you want to move yourself from, you know, to become the attacker, the plaintiff, not the defendant. And so, you know, filling out the form and joining our case might help you get your head in that space, you know. And I look at, you could still maybe find a lawyer. This is a crazy case with a wheel falling off a cart. You can't tell me that there's not a lawyer that wouldn't lick his chops over this thing. Come on, there's money to be made here. Think about it.
Millions.
Yeah, so there, you know, come on, any lawyer that's afraid to take it on, he's not worth his salt. You know, I mean, I wouldn't care. I mean, the fact that there's this money to be made, and look at, you know what they're going to do if he writes a good case? They're going to settle out of court anyway. They're going to make it all go away
make CPS go away.
Yes, it will, because you're going to sue them too. You're going to sue them for wrongful prosecution and torturous interference and whatever else you can dream of. I don't know. They don't belong there. And I would sue the doctor, too, even though they claim that they can't tell you who did it or whatever. That's baloney, because I told CPS this once before, because I know who made the anonymous call. I said, look, I'm going to sue them. well, we can't tell you. I said, it doesn't matter. I know who it is. And you can't harbor a fugitive, a criminal. You can't let them weaponize CPS against me or for a vendetta. And that's what's going on here. And I have proof of it. And I already know the name. So I'm going to sue them. And then I'm going to sue you for giving them credibility and following up on their false complaint.
Right.
You know what happened? They ran away. They couldn't walk away. They ran away because they're not used to that. Now, I mean, you could get a hold of a devil that doesn't want to give in, that fights, but, you know, I don't know, you know what I mean, that's going to be the case, you know. But you definitely don't want to be sitting there wringing your hands and being, you know, oh, poor me, because they'll chew you up and spit you out. You know, you got a lot of extenuating circumstances here, and I don't know how the doctor turned it around or whatever. I mean... He might have called. I mean, I don't know what he said. He might have said, yeah, he had bruises from that, but we found other old bruises. Like, you know, he's accusing you.
Yeah.
You know, in other words, that became the excuse for him to examine the child. And then he found what he felt was prior abuse or something like that. That's probably what's going on here, I would imagine. I can't imagine how they would justify it otherwise.
Head on with that. And I kind of suspect a pipeline from this particular hospital for child trafficking. Targeting single mothers and lower income. It is a state hospital, but that's a whole other field. Thank you so much.
Could be.
I'm definitely going to follow up with your suggestion.
Yeah, that's the best I could tell you on short notice like that. But, you know, I certainly wish you all the luck. And let us know, you know, how you make out as far as that goes. But at least fill the intake out, and that way there you can get some kind of an affidavit. And you know, and you want to make sure you're documenting everything because, you know, they're violating your rights all the way through, you know.
Every CPS interaction secretly or just blatantly, just because it's their version of events is always like night and day between the
parents. Right.
So, but yeah, thank you again. This has been very insightful. And I'm going to get on the application.
Gerard?
Yeah.
I told her I'd help her with her case, but I put a condition on it. I want her to take the civics course.
Okay.
Your opinion, is that ample, or should she take another course too?
No, look at...
Why is she been struggling with filing these forms? Because I understand what the steps I need to take. I just don't know proper way to present it in a way that's going to be the most effective. So I'll definitely take that course. Yeah.
And it's good. Look, it's good. It's good to have that in your repertoire, so to speak. You know, but I don't know what, you know. Look, we have a jurisdictionary course that teaches you how to file papers. Do you take that one too? You know, are you going to be filing papers in the court? I don't know, but to me, you don't have a lot of time to mess around here. You know, you're in the court, and things moving forward, and you want to do whatever. You know, there's certain things you're going to want to do at certain times. You may want to stall them. There's certain stall tactics you can use so that you can catch up with your education and your paperwork. But don't forget that, you know, you might have a good case here where you can actually sue them back and win, and you may be able to get a lawyer to facilitate that. You know, and of course I wouldn't know what lawyer to tell you to get. I mean, you're going to have to do your homework there, but you can't tell me that there's not anybody out there that's willing to take this case and kind of run with it by just hearing the whole situation and how you got there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, insane.
Without knowing anything about the case, just knowing the little bit that Fred told me, it sounds very tantalizing as far as them looking to take advantage of a situation, you know, and they've been known to do that. Okay. It's like the deep state saying, never waste a good crisis. Well, they're not wasting your crisis on you. They're using it to try to steal your child and make money.
Yep.
So, anyway, that being said, I think it's time for us to sign off, and thank you, everybody, for coming, and I'm sorry I left so many of you in the queue, but just get back in, hold them, you know, look at, write your questions down. You can even send them in, or just save them for next week, and we'll get to you again. Okay?
Thank you so much, Gerard.
Thank you.
Thank you. God bless. Good hearing from everybody. Another good call. And we'll see you here next week, same time, same place.